Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
You say something that's, there's going to be a heat wave?
Northwest, Pacific Northwest, 90 degrees, which is warm for them in Portland and Seattle. Even in the middle of summer, 90-degree weather, 90-plus degree weather, that's unusual.
That's very hot.
Yeah, and especially
not
mid-May.
Not easy to throw a whole salmon around in 90-degree weather. What's the name of that place where they do that?
The Pike Place Market.
Pike Place Market.
If you go on my YouTube page, I have a video posted of them throwing around the fish.
You have a YouTube page?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's big time.
What else is on there?
TikTok.
What else is on there? Route 66 stuff is on there. Some sailing stuff, videos that I posted.
He dances?
Are Andy and I on there at all?
No.
Didn't think so.
So you think a fish is more important than Andy and me?
Nice trout. Well,
if you put it that way. I hope everybody's having a wonderful day today. I'm new to this being an orphan on Mother's Day.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I know that's, well, but I mean.
But it's true.
It's true.
I'm an orphan, I mean, right?
When did your mom pass?
Oh, my gosh, 16 years ago.
Yeah, well, quite a while ago.
But I mean, even both parents, I was saying.
Yeah.
That's what makes you an orphan, is you lose both parents.
Right. So I'm adjusting.
What's it been, 2 years?
A
year and a half?
September will be 3 years.
Oh.
September will be 3 years, actually, yeah.
You had such a nice memorial for your mom last year.
Oh, thanks.
It really was nice.
Thank you.
That was nice.
I'd be lying if I didn't say that was part of how I'm feeling for this Mother's Day. But it made me so happy, just seeing people celebrating together. Gaynor Hall on the TV morning news this morning. They surprised her with her kids running onto the news set and bringing her gifts. And
it stopped being the news for a while, but I thought I was watching a home movie.
If you watch WGN in the morning, often it stops being the news. And Shawnee, when did your mom pass away?
Mom died in 2000. The weekend before Thanksgiving.
All right, so it's been a long while. This is a cheery note to start with.
I know, my goodness.
Talking about, this is what I'm dealing with, so.
Well, there's three orphans here.
Top of mind for me.
But Andy's mom.
Andy's mom.
She's here this week, yeah.
Yeah.
Happy Mother's Day to your mother, Andy.
Happy Mother's Day to your mom.
Will you see her, Andy? Do they live around here?
No, they're snowbirds, but they'll be back.
Well, take it from one of the three orphans here. Look into your mom's eyes as much as you can.
Okay.
Because you will never see eyes like that by anyone else.
Interesting.
The love, the unconditional love and support those eyes have, no one else can have for you. So
I did that.
Soak those eyes in.
I did with my mom. She said, what are you staring at?
Yeah.
What do you want?
And who are you?
Quit looking at me.
Yeah, no. I mean, I would give everything for one more look into my mom's eyes.
Andy's mom is a hoot.
She's fun, yeah.
We spent some time with her at Andy's wedding celebration. Both your dad and your mom are.
Yeah, the acorn didn't fall very far from my dad's tree.
They are complete hoots. Both of them are so hilarious.
Yeah, they're fun people.
So happy Mother's Day. What's your mom's first name?
Her name's Judy.
Judy. Yeah. Happy Mother's Day, Judy.
Yeah.
And all the moms celebrating today. We hope you have a wonderful, wonderful day today.
All you mothers. All you mothers out there.
That was going to be my Shawnee joke.
Shawnee wearing the mask today.
The K95.
Yeah. That was interesting.
Shawnee kicking it old school, wearing the
K95. It's not that old school.
Yeah. Are you wiping down your groceries again?
And no. He hasn't opened up his Amazon boxes for 3 weeks.
Only going one way down the grocery store aisles.
Remember how crazy things were? That was only 3 years ago. I mean, remember that? You didn't open up your mail for or box for like 2 days.
No, I was wiping everything down.
I know you were. You said that.
I was wiping everything down that I brought into the house, groceries.
We bought all packages, that Purell and everything. Right? And we were always washing
if
our
hands. If you could
hands. Find it. Right. Yeah. Your hand, our hand, I don't know about your hand. My hands got raw, like no. red because I was.
I also was hoarding moisturizer. So.
Course. That was and just 3 years.
Remember, we could, like, you couldn't find toilet paper? Or
right, remember that?
Remember the old days?
Gosh.
Crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy.
Is your mom, is she buried somewhere? Or is she cremated?
She's in my china cabinet right now.
She's in the break front? She next to the china?
She wanted to be cremated.
She's next to the wine glasses?
She insisted. Her exact words are, "I'm not going to waste all that money getting buried." So she wanted to be cremated, which is not exactly sanctioned by the Greek Orthodox Church.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, it is. So we had to forego a full formal Greek funeral
because of that.
And she said, she said, "Do you know what? I talk to God every night. I pray every single night before I go to bed. I have a personal relationship with him. I want to be cremated, and that's if you don't do that, I'm going to be really mad."
Wow. And so that's surprising.
And I said, "Well, what doesn't make you mad?"
Oh. No, continuing to poke the bear. So that's surprising that, I mean, the Catholic Church has even, consented to cremation.
I know. The Greek Orthodox Church is a little more...
Orthodox.
Old school. Orthodox, yeah. So she's in a beautiful urn. I don't know if you saw it. You guys were at the memorial, but we brought the urn there and her favorite flowers, calla lilies. We surrounded the urn with her favorite flowers. And now she she lives next to my good china.
Don't get rid of the brake front there. You're in trouble.
Yeah, which I thought would be creepy in the beginning. At first, I thought, I'm not sure if I want.
Now, how did you get?
But
you
I have, like
you have,
it.
You
I
have siblings. How did you get to be the holder of the urn?
Because I have it. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how it wound
you
up
don't
at my
share
house.
It?
No.
No, he's like, no, it's my mommy.
We don't need this. that's not too far off. Are your parents?
I visit my parents' crypt there at the Queen of Angels in Hillside, and I go there every month still.
Nice.
Yeah, every month I find I don't live too far from there. And I just sometimes I get out of the car. Sometimes I'll just because they're in an outdoor crypt.
Yep.
So I just do the drive through.
Get some fries.
Yeah, get some fries and a shake and then a quick wave. But then I went yesterday because I was coming here. So I went yesterday and I usually put a card on for a special occasion for either of them if it's their birthday anniversary or something like that, Mother's Day, Father's Day, and things like that. But I do go every month, and I actually have on their crypt. On the outside, you can do this now. I have their picture.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So it's nice to be able to at least see them.
I kind of like that.
I love it.
I know this might sound weird, but I sort of enjoy walking through cemeteries.
Older,
the better.
Whenever we go on any trip anywhere, we always find a cemetery.
Older, the better.
Through. Yeah.
It's fascinating, when you see the names and... the things that people etch on their tombstones.
Have you ever gone to Graceland Cemetery?
I have.
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, you can spend a day at Graceland Cemetery, right? What is it, on Irving and Clark?
Mm-hmm.
Some of the most prominent Chicagoans are there.
Yep.
Some prominent national people are there. Yeah.
Roger Ebert's there.
Oh, is he there? Potter Palmer and right. Daniel Burnham.
Yep.
And these amazing monuments that they built.
Right.
It's really a tourist attraction.
Right. Right. It's, there's our cemeteries in the Los Angeles area.
Oh, right.
Where showbiz people are buried, which are really cool. I visited Marilyn Monroe's talking about...
Oh, did you go to Forest... Is it Forest Lawn?
It's not Forest Lawn.
Oh, no.
It's... I forget the name. It's in Westwood.
Oh, okay.
There's a famous cemetery there in Westwood, and Dean Martin is right.
Isn't there always a rose on her
there
thing?
There is, supposedly, from the estate of Joe DiMaggio.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, even like, you know, some of the other cemeteries locally and New Orleans.
Definitely.
Know, it's, I know it seems like a weird thing to do when you're in another city, but... it's absolutely it's very extremely peaceful, by the way. Also, it's meditative, but it's so interesting to see people's lives. And I love when the pictures are there. You can see. I wonder what her life was like. I wonder what she did.
And I chose an older. I chose a picture when my parents were older, not younger. A lot of times, people will put their wedding picture, you know. But I was like, I want. Picture when I go to visit them, I want to see the parents that I saw. I didn't see my mom and dad when they got married or when they were younger. You know what I mean? So I have a picture when they were a little older,
right?
Because that's the people that I remember. You know, but some people will have younger, you know, pictures of people, and depending.
Yeah.
But they did that about 4 or 5 years ago, and I did it. I jumped right on it, and it's really nice just to be able to see them as opposed to just seeing the names and stuff like that.
Right. I love when you post pictures often on Facebook, and there's like little young Jim Toronto.
Oh yeah, I did that today. Yeah, I did that today already. My mom holding me up as I must have been, you know, I think it was my christening. Yeah, I have my it's my first dress.
Jeez.
My mom. I have pictures. My mom. Well, you know, just
don't blame your mother for your weird. She had fashion choice.
Only child, and it was later in life. She dressed me up like a little girl. I have pictures of me with my hair curled,
really,
in a dress. It is hilarious. Hmm. Yeah, the next door neighbor helped her. Because she's like, what would he look, you know, before he starts shaving, which was when I was like 7. You know, it's like, let's see what's going on. So,
really?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I was doing drag long before it was cool.
Look out, RuPaul.
Right.
Well, that explains a lot.
It sure does.
That explains quite a bit. How's Shwani today? Shwani's very quiet.
He's always quiet when I come in.
I don't think Shwani likes you.
No, he doesn't.
I have a newsroom to run.
Oh. Yeah, now he has a newsroom. If I wasn't here, he would be laughing hysterically, telling stories.
Well, the show is only starting here. There's another 3.5 hours.
Yeah, but listen to his
voice. Honestly, we really haven't done anything funny yet.
No, it's been very somber.
So far, we've talked about our dead parents.
And cemeteries. Good morning, everybody.
We know how to brighten your day.
It's a nice cloudy day. And you're
exactly. I'm curious about the Shwani YouTube page now.
Oh, okay. Just go on YouTube, type in D-Schwan.
D-Schwan.
And
That's his rap name. That's his rap.
So do you have actual videos or do you have still pictures?
No, both, actually. But there's a number of videos from...
Do you narrate any of it?
During the video, there is some narration, yes.
Oh, wow. Now I don't see it.
How many hits do you have? How many views?
Not a lot. But I got some nice compliments from some people that did chime in. People I don't know said, hey, I really like this. I enjoy this.
Here's one that says, Schwan's A Day in the Life of an RSR, a route sales representative for Schwan's Home Service.
Nope.
Do you have a little sideline?
Nope. That's not it. Nope.
Schwan's food delivery order?
I saw that one, too.
Schwan's food delivery? I think Schwani's got a little pot, you know, little side hustles going on here.
Or you better do better to have your page higher up on the search engine.
I'm seriously not finding it.
I'm not either.
Wait, just the letter D and then Schwan?
Should be, yeah. I'm looking for it myself. It may not be here anymore.
They took it down.
Oh, that's sad.
It was too controversial. That Route 66 story you did was very controversial.
I'll find it here, and we'll find it for you.
Turns out you can't get your kicks on Route 66.
Dave Schwan. Put Dave Schwan in there. I just found him.
He's like Dave Schwan. Here's Steve Partridge and Dave Schwann do a cover of Bye Bye Love. Is that you?
No.
Nice.
No.
Well, Shawnee, it should not be this difficult to find.
I know it shouldn't be. I don't know what's going on here.
Oh, here's one. We Jack Kerouac's On the Road as read by Dave Schwann.
Ooh, look at you, Mr. Beatnik.
With the, on the Hammond organ?
Somebody posted that.
When Dean ate supper at my house, he already had the parking lot job in New York. He leaned over my shoulders as I typed rapidly away and said,
oh, I know how that got posted.
Don't wait. Make it fast. As we rode in the bus in the weird phosphorescent void of the Lincoln Tunnel, we leaned on each other with fingers waving.
Watch the language here.
You work in blue? Oh, it's Jack Kerouac. Yeah, you're
watch
right.
The language.
Yeah, you're right.
Wow,
right.
Schwanny sounds like Jumpin' Jive there, doesn't he? There's like a little glint in his voice.
I'll find this Route 66 stuff.
Where was that done, though? Where was that carrier?
Oh, I did that.
In Lake Wobegon.
30 years ago. Just for fun. That was just for fun. Talk about getting kicks on Route 66. That was just for fun.
Yeah, but here's your dad. Your dad's on here.
Okay, there it is. Yeah.
Your dad having a genuine chocolate milkshake.
Yep, that's it. You found it.
At the Bradbury Bishop Deli.
In Webb City, Missouri.
Webb City, Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is Missouri there.
In 2009.
Mm-hmm.
What's on this? Let's see.
There's no bad language. You can play that.
Your dad doesn't go on a Lee Elia rampage?
No.
What's the big deal about this chocolate shake?
It's a real
chocolate shake. It was in a real soda fountain, old-fashioned soda fountain.
Right.
And so we went in there. It was a kind of an institutional stop on 66.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I understand it's not there anymore.
Oh, that's too bad.
The real thing. Classic, Dave. There's the real thing for you.
Look at that. There's your dad.
Yeah.
Paul Schwann, boy, does he look happy getting this chocolate shake.
He was a very happy man that day, yes.
Give us a taste test here.
All right. We better turn that off.
Sounds like Gaynor Hall's Mother's Day.
Turn that off before the F-bombs start flying in that one. All right. So we're going to take a break, and then we're going to do the news.
From this scintillating conversation.
And then, Schwanee, after the news, we'll get to today's far-flung forecast. How does that sound?
That's fine.
That sounds good to him. All right. And don't forget, good luck finding the Dave Schwann YouTube page.
But our friends... Take after compasses and protractors for your old school geographical locators or your modern newfangled devices, because today we're going to Grafton, West Virginia.
Oh,
Grafton, West Virginia, up in the northern part of the state. It's a beautiful state, too. It was first formed around the 1730s, and a number of people were involved in the Revolutionary War from that area. But Grafton Junction.
Jimmy Grafton.
Jimmy Grafton. Let's
Skippy.
See.
Skippy
no,
Grafton.
It was, somebody else, Grafton. I are
okay. Now you're throwing.
No, I know he was going for a joke. He was reaching for a joke. Yeah. He was reaching for the bath towel that wasn't there.
But we bring up Grafton because that is the home of a lady by the name of Anna Jarvis.
Oh.
Does that name do anything for you?
I dated her in high school.
You did? Well, that was a long time ago because
I was in high school a long time ago.
Yes, both of us were. But no, Anna Jarvis. Decided in around 1908 that she would be nice to honor her mother,
right.
Who was Anna Jarvis also, who was a caretaker and a nurse for soldiers in the American Civil War, and created Mother's Day work clubs to address public health issues. She was one of the people that was instrumental in finding and founding the first Mother's Day at Andrews Methodist Church in Grafton, West Virginia, and continue to push for a national holiday honoring our mothers and our grandmothers. And it was during Woodrow Wilson's presidency in 1914. Wow. He signed a proclamation designating Mother's Day, held on the second Sunday in May, as a national holiday to honor mothers. So that's the origin, more or less, of our American celebration of Mother's Day and our salute to all the mothers. It's a pretty much the same type of day in Grafton as it is here. Mostly cloudy, 63 right now.
And coming up in just a moment, we'll get to Dr. Kevin Most. And Gay Chwani, you were talking about the big breast cancer walk that's going on in the Beverly neighborhood.
Yes.
Right now.
Yes.
We'll get a little update on where we are in the fight against breast cancer from Dr. Kevin Most next. 9:38 on your beautiful Mother's Day morning. And that means it's time for Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital. Dr. Most, my friend, welcome to the program. Very nice to have you on here.
Dean, how are you doing? And happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there taking some time to listen to you.
There you go. And to your mom, who I'm sure you're going to be spending some time with today as well. So we wish everyone a very happy Mother's Day. And, you know, could there be a happier mom than a healthy mom? We've talked so many times in the past about breast health. On the fight against breast cancer, I don't know how many decades that we have been particularly doing that on this show with our three-hour specials that we've been doing that go back. You know what? The first one was in 1996. I happened to run across the tapes. That's how long ago that was. We were still using actual tape to record the shows. But our very first one was called The Silent War, The Fight Against Breast Cancer, 1996. And we've been pretty much been doing them ever since. And what strides, Kevin, right, that we've made in all of those years in the fight against breast cancer and many other cancers as well.
Oh, absolutely. And really, kudos to you, because your breast cancer special is really so educational to people. You always have great guests on there. You're always cutting edge. And really, just the awareness and impact that your show has made on breast cancers, especially in the Chicago area, is instrumental to some of the changes that we've seen.
So what have been some of the major strides, do you think, that there have been?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Dean. I think there's a wide range of major strides. And when we look at everything from diagnosis all the way to treatment, there's been a lot that's happened. Now, this week, something major happened, but when we talk about diagnosis, you know, we used to do mammograms with, you know, flat plates and x-ray equipment, and now we're advanced to MRI. We do 3D, we do three-dimensional breast cancer screening. So the screening portion of it has really, from a technology point of view, advanced dramatically in the past 10, 15 years.
So the actual imaging itself for a mammogram is no longer pressed, which was extremely painful and prevented a lot of people from going to get the test because of the pain that was involved. Is that no longer the case, or is it the case with an MRI now that you don't have to do that?
Well, yes and no to your questions. Well, we still do compress the breast for our imaging, so certainly it still is a little uncomfortable, but the technology now that can pick it up so much earlier in earlier stage is so important. And then the MRI as well as ultrasound that we use, those are non-painful tests and often used for follow-up testing. But certainly the advances in mammography, from reading the films and getting the quality of the films enhanced, has happened so much in the past 10, 15 years.
Yeah. Survival rates, how are we doing with breast cancer? Does that depend on how quickly you discover it?
Exactly. But as you would expect, the better we get at identifying early, the better we have for outcomes. So certainly, and that's probably one of the biggest changes, you know, that came out this week, where we're going to move that first mammogram from the age of 50 down to the age of 40. And there's many reasons to do that. But one, we know if you can find a breast cancer very early, something as simple as a lumpectomy can be done, which will eliminate the need for chemotherapy for massive surgery. And it really just enhances the quality of life as well as the quantity of life the earlier we can capture this cancer.
Yeah, and actually there was some news this week as well about pancreatic cancer, which is maybe one of the most aggressive or at least treatable, because by the time it's detected, it's generally too late to do anything about it. What was the news regarding diagnoses of pancreatic cancer?
Yeah, you touched on it. We don't have a good screening test for pancreatic cancer. And often, the symptoms are just kind of vague and out there, and we really don't even know what to look for to even start to screening. But what we have done, and everyone's been hearing about AI for the past 5 or 6 months, well, a study came out from the Veterans Association as well as a group in Belgium that looked at 9 million patient records, and 28,000 pancreatic cancer patients were involved in those records. And what they did is they said, hey, if we put an algorithm in place that looks at the symptoms of these individuals as well as many other things, we could identify pancreatic cancer 3 years before it's identified currently.
Wow.
That is just
major.
Groundbreaking as we start to roll it out, and really it's going to show us the power of AI here.
Is it because it doesn't show up on regular scans because there's so many organs in the body and it's not as fully visible? Is that why you can't see it?
Well, Jim, it's interesting. People that, let's say you go into the emergency room because you have X, Y, or Z that has nothing to do with pancreatic cancer, but we decide we're going to do a scan of you. And sometimes we inadvertently find it. We're not looking for that because that's not why we did the test, but we find it. So those people are the people that are lucky. They won the lottery, right? We found it because we were looking for something else, but the radiologist noted that that was present, and now it's early enough. Because often, by the time you have symptoms, where you're going to have discomfort on the right side, you're going to have yellowing in the eyes. Now that cancer has spread outside the pancreas, often to the liver, to the gallbladder, to those areas, and now it's almost, in some cases, inoperable and really very difficult to treat.
I was reading a news story about a vaccine for pancreatic cancer. It was a study that was posted in Nature magazine, in which doctors in the U.S. and Germany used the mRNA vaccine, same vaccine type that was used to combat COVID, and they found some positive results in fighting pancreatic cancer. Have you heard anything about that, or is that just early stages?
Well, it's in the early stages, but it's actually very promising as well. So what happens is when we have a diagnosis of cancer, what happens is they'll go in and they'll take a biopsy, they'll take a portion of it out, and then we'll make a vaccine against that specific cancer and give that vaccine back to the person. So now the person's immune system is going to go and look for those cancer cells and attack them. Hmm. So mRNA, we're all talking about it with COVID vaccines and how quickly it came up, but I'll tell you, the ability to do this on a smaller level where it's going to be specific for the specific cancer you have is going to be fascinating. Think about eliminating the side effects of chemotherapy and using your own body's immune system to fight a cancer and eliminate a cancer, and often one that we can't get radiation to, or the chemotherapy is so toxic that we have to decide if it's really worth it.
That's just amazing to me. I remember on that very first breast cancer special that we did in 1996, one of my guests on that show was a news person, newscaster, journalist, Linda Ellerbe. Remember Linda Ellerbe?
Yeah.
And she was on NBC.
She was great.
She did that late night news show. She was great. But also was one of the first people to really go public about breast cancer and full mastectomy. And she talked about that the only treatments there were at that time for breast cancer, burn, slash, and poison. Burn it out with radiation, slash it with mastectomy, poison it with chemotherapy. And look at what Kevin's talking about now, Dr. Most is talking about now, with fighting cancer cells with your own cancer cells. Absolutely amazing. And, you know, this what the incident, Kevin, that you're talking about, I don't think I've ever told you this, that when I had my thyroid cancer in 2007, it was found by mistake, just like what you're talking about, where they were looking for something else and they just happened to find it. You know how these doctors, when they're giving you physical exams, they'll put the stethoscope on your back and, you know, tell you to breathe, exhale, exhale. What are you listening for then exactly, Kevin? Or is that just a joke you doctors like to do?
AM radio.
On people. No. See if you can hear John Williams show.
Trying to get the quick joke of the week.
Well, two things. Dean, I remember very clearly when you were diagnosed with thyroid cancer because we had many, many conversations at that time.
You were the first one I went to. I said, I don't even know what a thyroid is. Kevin walked me through all of this. That's right.
Well, and you know, and rightly so, the concerns you had just from the cancer itself, but also your voice is how you communicate with people and how you, that's your occupation. And with thyroid cancer, when we remove the thyroid and we do surgery there, there's a nerve that can actually impact the voice. So, you know, we made sure that you got in the right hands with the expert and the right person to do your surgery, which was great. But as far as listening to the lungs, we're not doing that to waste time. We're actually
listening to Like, I'm charging them $100. Yeah. I better make it good.
Yeah, I got to say at least 3 minutes in here.
So we're doing a couple things. One, we're listening, obviously, to the air, whether it's moving in and moving out as well as it should.
From the lungs?
We're listening for it.
Yeah.
Correct.
So you're hearing the lungs from from my back?
Absolutely.
Wow. Yep.
So we're listening to your lungs from air moving in, air moving out, making sure that every area, we listen in about six different places when we're looking in the back to make sure that each of the lobes is working appropriately. Now, the funny thing is, you know, you talk about when we put our stethoscope, how about when you put our stethoscope on your neck? You're like, what are you listening to on my neck?
Yeah.
And actually what we're listening to is the carotid artery there to see if there's something called a Bruit. And a Bruit is where there's turbulent flow, which can show blockage in the carotid artery, which can lead to stroke and can lead to other problems. Mm. So we're not just wasting time. We're actually doing things when we're listening to the heart.
So those things really work then?
Of course.
Those stethoscopes really work.
But, you know, well, that's why they have to wear them around their necks like that.
It's like Groucho Marx. I just thought they just wore them because they look cool.
The my physician at the time who was doing all of that, and while they were doing that, just rested his hand on my shoulder while he was doing that. And he goes, I feel a little lump right here. That's weird. Let's we should do a little test on that. Completely by mistake. I had no symptoms.
And that was the thyroid?
I have nothing. I had no clue whatsoever.
And that's how he found it?
That's how he found it. We did some tests, and that's how they found it.
Wow.
So listen to your doctors all the time is the moral to that story. Let me take a quick break, and we'll come back. Your questions for Dr. Kevin Most are next. Coming up a little bit later on in the show, an interview, one-on-one interview, that I did the other day with Michael J. Fox, one of the biggest stars in the world at one time, now probably best known for his dealing with a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease and, you know, what kind of effect it had on him in the early stages. And now, 29 years later, after his diagnosis, how he is dealing with it today. We'll share that interview with you. Coming up later on, Kevin, that's probably something we ought to get into one of these Sunday mornings and talk a little bit more about Parkinson's. But this Michael J. Fox story is it's stunning. It's heartbreaking. The courage that this man has in doing, you know, going public with this and the amount of money that he's raised for Parkinson's research is just nothing short of admirable. It's amazing. Question on our text line. Not sure if you're talking about COVID today. We are. But it says, I've had five vaccines, the last one being in September 2022, which I assume was the bivalent. Do I need a booster now? I'm 71 and in fairly good health.
Yep. You walked right into that question. Absolutely you do. So right now, what happened just in the past month is we did approve that second booster. And if you remember, we talked that the UK and Canada had done this months before us. We had this surplus of vaccine. We know that the antibodies wane after about 6 months. So we're wondering, why didn't the CDC and FDA come forward and say it's time for a booster for at least those over the age of 60, over the age of 60, compromised? So I would certainly go and get it, especially, and it's not like you have to rush out today, but we know that the number of vaccines that are still available that the government has purchased is decreasing. And we're eventually going to get to a point where, depending on your insurance, is whether or not it's going to be covered. Now, at the age of 70, you're on Medicare, it will be covered. But certainly getting the vaccine right now is very appropriate for you because you're well beyond the 6 months waiting period and at your age. So I would strongly recommend it.
And are we on our own now paying for vaccines and tests and all that? I forget what the exact date was where it was no longer covered.
Yeah, the date was Thursday, and so it is no longer covered. But I would tell people there are still tests available. The government has bought a series of these. So until those are all distributed, certainly you can still get them. So going on to covidtest.gov, you can order tests right now, the home tests. I would strongly recommend doing it because it's been very clear that insurance companies are no longer going to pay for the home tests, and you'll be buying those from pharmacies instead of having them shipped free to you from the government. So we all paid for them with our taxes, but I would certainly say go, because eventually the ones that we've purchased are going to be gone, and it's going to be back on the dollar of the individual.
Very good. Great information today. Kevin, I hope you have a great day today. Again, the greatest gift that you can give to your mom is to make sure that she stays in great health. And that means, checking with your own physicians and arming yourself with all of the latest information. That's why we're so grateful for Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital. Kevin, enjoy your day today.
You got it, Dean. We'll talk soon.
Thank you very much. Hey, I thought of something else that we should do, that we can put on our list of things that we want to do, but we'll never get around to doing them.
Like several locations of doing the show.
Kayaking,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
the bowling alley.
We were going to have a Sunday morning kayak. We were going to have a big bowling party, which I still think would be.
Why couldn't you do the bowling party?
Bowling party
That'd
would be
fun,
great.
Yeah,
that would be hilarious.
Well, it would just be, you know, we got to get all the technical stuff too.
Come on, there's a million bowling alleys now. That's
not a problem of finding a bowling alley. We've had several bowling alleys that
have offered.
Yeah, they said they would.
The location.
Well, if you can do the tree time thing, why can't you put a bowling alley? Get Marlene on that.
Have you met Marlene? Jim,
let's go.
Jim, this is Marlene. Marlene, Jim.
Let's go.
Anyway, I thought of a new thing that we can do. And maybe we can do this at the next tree time broadcast as well. I want to start a boy band.
Wow.
Well,
who are you going to get?
We had that in the works.
All of us.
I know. I'm just
we had that in the works a month or so ago. We called ourselves the Three Mopes.
Right. Right.
Sunday Mopes. Yeah.
Sunday Mopes.
Sunday Mopes. Yeah. But, this group BTS, they're the hottest thing in the world right now. You think of like Menudo. You think of NSYNC. You think of the boy bands. New Kids on the Block. They're having a big convention at the Donald D. Stevens Convention Center. You know, we become super popular. We could have a convention,
our own convention.
Yeah. You might have to redefine boy.
What do you mean?
The gray tones.
Because some of us are a little long in the tooth.
How's the baldometer doing?
You know who could be the star? Because I don't think it's Andy Schwani or me or you. You can be in the band if you.
I'd love to play Jim. Tambourine.
You know who I think would be the star is producer Jack.
Oh yeah,
have you heard his voice
singing?
Well, I've never heard him sing.
Oh,
voice of an angel.
Listen to that.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily equate to a singing voice.
Are you a singer at all, Jack?
No.
give it a try. Sing Happy Birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
I'm swooning.
Yeah, you're right. You're not a singer.
I'm swooning. Can I have your picture so I can put up in my room?
No.
Tiger Beat magazine?
Yeah. 16.
I think that would be part of the attraction of this group is that we're five guys.
I could see all the choreography.
We're a boy band, and we sound awful.
The choreography. And I'm assuming none of us can dance either.
All right. On three, we all sing Happy Birthday. On three. One, two, three.
Happy birthday.
Wow. You never said what key, so it always... Wow. I knew that was going to happen.
Whatever key that was, don't do that again. Happy Mother's Day. We are your Hallmark card aisle of the airwaves.
Wow.
I didn't want to hear here this morning. I'm not ashamed to say it. You're all going to have a wonderful, wonderful Mother's Day. Shwani. Favorite TV or film mom?
Favorite TV or film mom?
Yep. Andy, favorite TV or film
Marion Cunningham.
Oh, happy good days. Choice. Yep. Yeah.
That's a good one.
I'm going to have, there are a number of them. I know you're thinking, I'm thinking June Cleaver. Donna Reed was a mom.
I'm hoping you'll TV think mom. Of one from this millennium.
Mom's Mabley.
I guess Aunt B wouldn't count as a mother.
No.
She's an aunt. Yeah,
she's a mother figure. But
mother figure. Yeah.
Hope he almost kicked her.
You
out
know
of the
who
house
was? You know you didn't.
Hope he didn't like her because she couldn't first throw episode. A ball or catch yeah. a fish.
Oh, that first episode.
First episode. Poor
never
me.
Never fails
well,
to
well,
make
she
me.
Can't catch a ball or catch a fish. Kick her out. Throw her out into the street.
No, but he comes around at the last minute as she is leaving.
She was leaving,
and he comes racing out of the house and says, "Pow!" He doesn't say "Paw." It's "Pow, pow." How? She needs help, How? She can't catch a fish. She can't play baseball.
What's she going to do?
She's going to do. She can't be out on her own. And by this time, I'm in tears.
Meanwhile, she stuck around through Mayberry or RFD.
Yeah, she did. That's right.
Yeah, she was.
You know who was?
She was with Sam Jones out on the farm.
Opie won an Oscar and Sam Jones. She's still cleaning Sam Jones' house.
Who was a TV mom, although it's not, as prominent as some of the others, was Mary Tyler Moore on Dick Van Dyke. Oh, Richie. Yeah.
Laura Petrie. By the way, there is a documentary that's going to be coming out this week on HBO, I believe it is, on the life of Mary Tyler Moore.
Oh, really?
Different. I saw part of it. A whole new look into the life of...
she had a tough personal life.
She had a very tough life.
Yeah, you don't really hear much about
very,
it.
Very, very, very tough life with health, with marriages.
Her kids.
Kids.
Yeah, didn't her kid commit suicide?
The whole deal, yeah. But Laura Petrie was a pretty good mom.
Mine would have to be Doris Roberts from Raymond.
Everybody Loves Raymond.
Because my mom looked like her.
Yeah.
And, in fact... People would even say, when that show was on, it's like, and I sometimes when I watch the show, she'll move a certain way, and I'll be like getting the chills, woof, because my mom had that helmet hair, like she did. And I'm like, oof. One time I met her, I interviewed her one day, and I brought my mom's picture, and I said, constantly people, and she's like, oh my gosh, we do look.
my mom thought that she was Doris Roberts.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She was her favorite. That she loved that show. But she said, that's me. Everything, and none of you understand me, everything I do is for love. It's for love of the family. No matter how intrusive I am. She was quoting lines from the show. And I probably have to go along with that. But I loved Florida from Good Times.
Oh, wow.
Esther Rolls. She was a great
That's a good one.
A really fantastic mom character.
That's a good one.
Sally Field in Steel Magnolias.
Oh, nice.
That scene.
And Forrest Gump, too.
And Forrest Gump, that's right. Yeah. When her daughter dies in Steel Magnolias, that's one of the most powerful mother scenes ever. How do I go on?
What about Shirley MacLaine in Terms of Endearment? When she's like, give my daughter the shot!
Fantastic.
Oh, that scene is unbelievable.
And also related to that, in that movie, what's her name? Deborah Winger? Was that the daughter?
Yeah.
When she's saying goodbye to her two young boys.
Yeah.
and telling them to be nice. And
right.
The little boys are crying.
Oh, my God.
That's a fantastic mother-child scene.
That movie was so schizophrenic because the first hour and a half is kind of light and funny and ironic. And then that last 20 minutes, you don't even see that coming.
Yeah.
And it's just like you said, the waterworks. I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
The drama and the sadness.
And Jack Nicholson, who's really just kind of a dope for right. the early parts of the movie.
Yeah.
Kind of a scoundrel, really, almost.
Definitely.
Turns out to be one of the most heartwarming scenes ever.
Yeah.
When the death takes place. That's a really...
If you've never seen Terms of Endearment, folks, please, yeah, go see that
we've
movie.
We've pretty much ruined it for you.
I know, but you got to see it.
But it's a great movie.
Yeah.
Somebody texts in Edith Bunker.
Edith.
One of the great, great mother characters.
Absolutely.
Just one of the great characters of all time. You know, I'll catch a rerun every once in a while. And the one where Edith dies and Archie is left by himself holding the slipper.
That is the saddest.
He finds the slipper.
Oh, he says, I was supposed to go first.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh. They don't play that one very often because it was on Archie Bunker's plate.
It's a heartbreaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's as cheery as the opening of today's show was.
I know, Dean. Come on.
I don't know where that came from. I didn't intend on starting the show with death, but it just happens. Sometimes it just happens. Somebody texting in June Lockhart and Lassie.
Oh. And that's a good one. And Lost in Space.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't really remember her as a terribly memorable mother.
Little Timmy Martin and Lassie?
Nothing personal, June Lockhart.
Oh, she was a loving mother to little Timmy.
Don't remember.
I liked.
Maybe I just wasn't in that, you know, into that show enough. I didn't really get into my June Lockhart until she was the lady doctor on Petticoat Junction.
Oh wow, yeah, she came after. The original.
That's right.
Yeah. What about Seinfeld's mom?
She was funny.
I liked her.
George Costanza's mom.
George Costanza. Estelle Costanza.
Estelle, yeah. That's who I meant.
She was a fantastic
mother. Oh, yeah.
Mother.
That's who I meant. I'm sorry to say, yeah.
Yeah.
Although Liz Sheridan was good as Seinfeld's mom, but yeah, I mean George's mom. Yeah. Definitely. I was duped!
I walk in and I find my son in an amusement park.
Merlot? Did they just invent that?
Never heard of it.
Never heard of Merlot. Did they just invent it?
Moira Rose on Schitt's Creek. Somebody texted.
Oh, wow.
That's Catherine O'Hara's character at Schitt's Creek. The Christmas Story mom. That's a good mom. She was a really loving mom.
Yeah.
Donna Reed on The Donna Reed Show.
And in It's a Wonderful Life. She's the mother of George Bailey's children.
Oh, yes.
Are you on the nest, Mary?
George Bailey Lasso Stork.
Lasso Stork.
Somebody texts in Peggy Bundy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right.
Morticia Adams from the Adams family.
Well, what about Lily Munster? We can't forget Lily Munster.
Lily Munster was a great mom.
Yeah.
Taking care of Spot under the stairs.
And Eddie.
Little Eddie. Favorite TV mom, Olivia Walton. On The Waltons, played by Michael Learned.
That show was hugely popular. My gosh.
You hated it?
I didn't hate it. I'm just saying it was so popular that it won there was a run there where it won the Emmy every year. And she did, too, Michael Learned.
Yeah. That's a good show. That's a good show. Carol Brady.
Yeah,
of course. See that.
Mrs. Partridge.
Carmela Soprano.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting one.
It's an interesting choice. I can see that. Debbie Reynolds as the mother for Albert Brooks.
Oh, in Mother.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was kind of my mom, yeah.
Howard's mom on The Big Bang Theory.
Heard but never seen.
Only heard, right?
Yeah.
That was a great character. Look at this. 847 says, Terms of Endearment, so dumb I hated it. Not one tear was shed for me.
Holy cow. Are you made of stone?
It's the first time I've ever heard that.
No kidding.
But, you know, to each his own. Wilma Flintstone had to put up with Fred, but also took care of Pebbles.
Betty took care of Bam Bam.
That's right. That's right. I would argue that Betty had a harder time raising a child.
Going bam, 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 bam,
yeah,
bam.
Yeah, the whole house shook.
Who had a club. walking around with a club all the time.
I mean,
time.
Pebbles just sang a few songs, but Bam Bam was making everything. All the stuff was falling out of the shelves.
Right. At least they both got their own cereals.
Right.
Fruity and Cocoa.
Yep.
Well, hello. We won't say which is which. Any votes for Endora, Unbewitched?
Oh, hello.
Mother-in-laws are moms, too. That's true. Although she was Samantha's mom.
Hello, dum-dum. Durwood.
Single mom Alice from the TV show Alice.
Uh-huh.
Rebecca from This Is Us. I've never seen an episode of This Is Us.
No. You haven't seen This Is Us?
No.
No.
Very intriguing show.
I only watch Channel 9. Is it on Channel 9?
No.
Never mind.
Doesn't
exist in my book then. Lots of good ones here. Lots of.
What about Nancy Walker, Rhoda Morgenstern's mother?
That's a great mom.
Yeah.
That's a fantastic mom character.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorites, too. Olympia Dukakis in Moonstruck.
Oh, yes.
She good in
yes.
that.
Yeah. Yes.
Loretta, do you love him?
That's too bad.
That's too bad.
That's too bad.
They'll break your heart.
Yeah, Ma, I love him.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Fantastic characters.
Do you love him, Loretta?
Let's get to some more of these in a minute. Elton Jim Toronto is here because his new play is going to be, it's in previews right now.
Yeah.
But is going to be debuting. We'll talk about that in a sec. Thanks, computer. Appreciate that. It is 7:25, and this is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. So, The Crucible, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I am currently appearing in previews. We have opening night on, we have a show on Thursday, and then opening night will be on Friday. At the
Jeff nominated, Jefferson, Joseph yes. Jefferson Award nominated.
Yes. Didn't win.
Famous actor, Elton Jim Toronto.
Yeah.
Do they put that in the playbill, Elton Jim Toronto?
I put that down in my bio. I do put, and I actually mentioned your name.
In your bio?
Yeah, in the bottom. I said he's also. Appears on the radio with Dean Richards and on WGN. So yeah, I put and he's known as Elton Jim.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, so I put that in there.
Very nice.
But yeah, this is
has your life changed a lot since your Jeff nomination?
Not at all. Not at all. Not one inkling. In fact, just more more disappointment because I didn't win. It got worse, actually.
Disappointment and bitterness.
Yeah. Although we did get the Jeff for Best Play of the Year, which was very nice.
Yeah.
And there was only four of us in it, so I have to think that I did something good.
You were at least one quarter responsible for that.
But no, we actually but the theater itself, that play itself, we won four awards.
Yeah. Really nice. And this Crucible just seems like a perfect follow-up project.
It's great. The Invictus Theater is it's a small storefront theater, one of the great storefront theaters in Chicago. It's on Thorndale. It's near Broadway and Hollywood in the Edgewater neighborhood. And it's really made for this play. If you don't know The Crucible, it's set in the time of the Salem witch trials in 1692. Arthur Miller, who wrote Death of a Salesman and All My Sons and View from a Bridge, and he was married to Marilyn Monroe for a while. We talked about her earlier. But this was not only about the Salem witch trials in 1692, but it was written in 1953 during the height of the McCarthy communism red scare,
right.
And so he was equating the fact that in 1692 there was this hysteria of fear of witches, how it was taking over the town of Salem, and the people were being encouraged to tell on their friends if they were a witch to save their own skins, and the same tactics at that time, 260 years later, in 1953, were being used for people as Joe McCarthy, the senator from Wisconsin, was trying to weed out supposed communism and communists within the American government, and people's lives were destroyed blacklisted. They lost their jobs. They lost their families. In many cases, people committed suicide because their lives were decimated because their friends told on them to save their own skins if they were involved, if they went to a sure. communist meeting, things like that. Yeah. So that's where the show you know, has its underbelly. But it
now,
really,
which witch do you play?
I don't play a witch. I wanted to.
Serena?
But, right. I loved Serena Bewitched. She was a little minx, wasn't she?
She was a little vixen.
Yeah. No, but I play the judge. I play the Judge Danforth. I actually don't even get into the play until the after the intermission. But then I'm pretty much on fire, hanging witches. And it's a theocracy, and I believe the devil exists. And I am just pointing and accusing. And what's so great about this play, it's already an intense play. And you can't help but get wrapped up in the hysteria of it. In the small situation of our theater, it makes it even more of a crucible,
intense,
which is, you know, because I mean, and the way the set is, you walk into these two wooden doors, and you are in
the courtroom.
Wow. And you know, there's other rooms that take place, but you get that sense of it, and so it's pretty intense. And there's an amazing cast. The director of it, once again, is the artistic director Charles Askenizer, who won Best Director, the Jeff Award for Virginia Woolf. So I'm excited to be working with Charles again. I like to think that he's my Martin Scorsese and I'm his Robert De Niro. I don't know if he feels that way, but no, I really enjoy working with him, and he's really brought in some really interesting, visuals to help the audience feel this tension that goes on.
So
in
it'll
Salem.
It'll be playing until when
we start. There's previews, like I said, this Wednesday or Thursday. We open 19th. We go until June 11th. And we actually might add some more shows too. But if you want to get tickets, you go to Invictus, Invictus Theater. co.com and then just / Crucible, and it'll take you right to that. We've got just a very talented cast, many Jeff Award nominees and winners in the cast as well.
Other people that haven't won.
Who haven't won and who have won.
Yeah. Other disappointed, bitter actors.
But I'm very proud of
part of it all.
Very proud of the show and very proud. And I'm excited about my performance.
Very
and,
good. Very good.
And so hopefully this time Dean might come.
Yeah. We'll see. I'm
very busy.
I'm very busy.
Very busy.
My schedule is filling up like crazy. Coming up after the break, our Week in Theater segment. With a special play for Mother's Day, but especially for moms, called Mother Freakin' Hood. We've got some of the performers who will be here and to perform for us. And a little bit later on this morning, my one-on-one interview with the amazing Michael J. Fox. That's all coming up. And look at that already. It's 10:37. Dean Richards Sunday morning on WGN. We've got the live performance coming up for you. A special show that is perfect for Mother's Day, but really is a perfect show for women any time of the year. We'll get to that in a second. But let me just start off quickly with the Tony Awards, which apparently are not going to happen this year because of the writer's strike. The producers of the Tony Awards went to the Writers Guild of America, and they tried to get a waiver from them, which would have allowed them to produce the Tony Awards show with writers. And the Writers Guild said, "No way, we're on strike,
right.
And we're not going to do it." So that pretty much put the kibosh on what is, without a doubt, my favorite award show of the year. It's, you know, I always say I watch so you don't have to, because most of the award shows are so stupid. This one is actually entertaining because they give us performances from some of the biggest shows that are on Broadway and some of the top shows that are
on. They're going to have the ceremony? Not even going to have the ceremony?
Well, they haven't. The producers of the Tonys haven't said if they're going to cancel altogether, which I doubt.
Yeah.
Or if they're going to wait until the writer's strike is over, possible. They haven't said. Or if they're going to do it the way they did before television was invented,
right?
When they would just go to a ballroom someplace You know, like, you know.
The Roosevelt Hotel in L.A. when they did the Academy Awards.
Yeah. I was thinking more
like Sardis,
like
maybe?
The Robin Hood Inn out in countryside.
Oh, wow. The Saber Room?
The Saber Room.
Jeez.
That's what I was thinking. Where, you know, they'd go to some big, you know, banquet hall, basically, and do the award show as a dinner.
Yeah, but you know, the theater people, they want to, I mean, to your point, they love the Tony Awards because it is Broadway.
It's so entertaining.
Yeah, so they're not going to just want to go to like some luncheon and have rubber chicken and say, here's the best play. So they're going to wait.
I have a feeling that they're going to wait until the strike is over to do this. And, you know, I feel especially bad because of Sean Hayes,
right?
Jack from Will and Grace, who is nominated for Best Actor in a Play for his phenomenal performance in Goodnight Oscar, which is wowing them on Broadway right now.
And started at the Goodman.
But, you know, I feel like he's going to win a Tony Award for this amazing performance. And I want it to be on television. I want everyone to see our friend.
No, I think they will.
Sean Hayes.
I think they'll wait. Because it's usually in June.
Yeah, June 11th is when it was scheduled.
So they, you know, I'm sure they figured that this strike's not going to end soon. And it takes at least a month to put a show like that together.
I would think so.
Can't you have it without writers, though? Without those bad jokes?
I was coming to the theater today. And
yeah, I mean, you know.
I just flew in from Los Angeles.
You could still have the songs.
Boy, are my arms tired.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
I would be perfectly happy with a Tony Awards presentation of where they bring the cast of, like, Some Like It Hot, which is another of the biggest shows on Broadway right now. You do your performance of Some Like It Hot. You give out an award.
Right.
You do your performance from whatever show. You give out an
Remember
award.
Remember, they did that with the Oscars during COVID. Had a very streamlined.
Here's the thing. The performers probably do not want to break. They probably want to honor the writer's strike.
That's
and
true.
Probably would not break the picket line. For
That's
that.
True.
So. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. We'll keep you posted on all that. Meantime, we've got plenty of shows here in Chicago. We're not having any problems putting shows on here in Chicago. And one of them is called Mother Freakin' Hood, which is just opened at the Venus Cabaret Theater at the Mercury Theater on North Southport in Chicago. And it is, as has been described to me, the story of motherhood. From when you first learn that you are about to become mother and all the way through the many stages of motherhood, from pregnancy tests to empty nests, one bottle at a time, as it says. And one of the stars of the show is here with us, and also the playwright producer, Sarah Stotz. Sarah, welcome. Nice to have you here with us. Hello.
Well, I'm honored to be here. I love your work. I love your reviews.
Aren't you nice?
I can't believe a little girl like me from Ponca City, Oklahoma gets the same space as Dean Richards. Hi, so thank you for having
us. You're on WGN. That's very nice of you. I appreciate it. And also to Fadzwa Diener. Did I say it right?
Yes, you did.
To Fadzwa Diener, who plays
Diener.
Diener. Hey,
that's
Diener.
You.
Hey, Diener.
You guys are meant to be in the same room together.
Exactly. One of the performers in the show. Sarah, why don't you start off just by explaining what the show is, in case I didn't do it properly at all.
You did it great. It's about motherhood. It is a celebration of the absurdities that parents go through, really, but we're saying it in the lens of mothers, because we're mothers, when you dive off this cliff into motherhood. It follows three women in very different stages of mothering. One is a new mother who Tafadzwa plays. Her name is Rachel Nixon, and she's so excited to have a baby, and she's so naive about it, and she really doesn't know what she's going to be getting into. Thus, she's so excited.
Yeah. Sound familiar to any of you ladies listening out there today? That terrified feeling of, oh my God, what's about to happen to her?
Yeah, and she expresses that so great in our production number Baby Phase, when she's realizing, oh my goodness, what did I get myself into? And then the second time mother is, she's Angie. She's played by Jacqueline Jones. She's fantastic. And she has everything together. She has planned this pregnancy, and it's going to be a boy because they've already had a girl. And nothing ever goes for her that she hasn't planned. We all know those people. Mm-hmm. We love them. And then our Marsha is our third-time mother. Actually, she's on her fourth kid now. She was not expecting to have another baby. Mm-hmm. She has three teenage daughters, planning on sending them to college, and now has an IPSY. She's played by Leah Morrow.
An IPSY. I've never heard it called that before.
We call it a
happy IPSY.
Yeah.
I had an IPSY.
Oh, surprise. Wasn't that a wonderful surprise? And one of her lines is, you know, Jerry told me I was too old to get pregnant again. And Leah plays her remarkably well. And so they develop this unlikely friendship in the gynecologist's office when they all find out they're pregnant. They all have these different reactions to it. And they go through this journey of motherhood together. And so really at the end, and you've covered a lot of musicals, so you kind of know how this goes. You know, we thought we were writing a musical about motherhood. And in the end, we realized we were really writing a musical about friendship. And so a very smart friend of ours pointed that out when we were doing a performance in our living room for him. He was our college roommate, too.
It's got to start someplace.
He's our college roommate, too. And he says, you know, your finale really needs to be about friendship because that's what this is about. And I'm like, I got it.
Yeah.
And wrote the song, and that's how it is today.
Yeah. So, how many songs?
So it's cut down now to 15. In this production, we shaved a couple of songs off, which I think work well for this production. Tafadz, what would you say?
I'd agree. Yes.
Thank you. She was there. She
was great at your job.
Yeah, she had to learn all of them. They were like, oh, forget that. We're not doing these. I can't believe how malleable you guys are. I mean, like, we just rewrite and we're like, okay, learn this now. They're like, okay. Yeah. Like, I can't even remember what I wrote.
Right, right. I'm always amazed, actually, that how actors, performers, producers, directors, how they can do that. I've kind of followed the path of a lot of these shows that come in to do their pre-Broadway runs here. And the show that I saw when they started the pre-Broadway run is different from when they leave here to go to New York. And then I'll go see the show in New York, and it's almost a completely different show. And the actors have told me, they give us notes every day, and songs that we struggled to learn to get down get cut, and they add something else, and you're about to do a show tonight, we just added a new song, and now it's in the show. It's like, how do you do that? So Tafadz, let me ask you, how do you do that?
I ask myself that too when I'm lying in bed after a rehearsal. I feel like it's one of the most important things, like, as an actor, because I mean, it's live theater. Even if the script is the same, the show is never the same every night. And I think that that's what's beautiful about this show, is that we have found the fun in the change, in the wackiness, in all of that. And it's really fun to get to do that.
Yeah. How does it feel for you to play the first time mom in the show?
It's terrifying sometimes because I'm realizing, this is something I'm likely going to go through at some time. I'm not a mother yet, but I'm on stage with two other mothers, and it was so fun in the rehearsal process. Like, sometimes my water breaks. All our waters break in the show. And I remember one time I was like, am I going to have, like, actual water on stage? And all the moms, they all started telling me, your water's going to break. Like, get ready. It's a weird color and all this. They thought I was genuinely asking if my water was going to break when I actually have a baby. I was like, oh, no. I mean, I just met the show, but I let
them have their moment.
There's
no fluids on stage.
It's so beautiful. I get so much advice all the time about it.
That sort of underscores what you're talking about friendship, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the sisterhood. I'm a story about mothers, but it's a story of friendship and the sisterhood, how women want to help each other go through this very difficult time.
Well, one of our lines is it takes a village, champagne and friends. And it really, and maybe Xanax, but it does. I was saying earlier, I wrote a whole song about Xanax.
What rhymes with Xanax?
See the show and find out. Like,
oh, there you go. We don't have to rhyme with Xanax. Oh, okay. Yeah. He figured that out. But that's what it all, it takes a village. And so it's really fun when we do these productions and you see your friends and family coming and you're like, you raised my kids. You know, we all took care of our kids together.
Right.
We don't live in a bubble. I mean, I'm sure you guys have memories growing up of, you know, going to your friends' houses, their moms sure. are there cooking you food and stuff sure. and letting you beat up their couch.
Yeah, of course. The show is called Mother Freakinhood, and it's at the Venus Cabaret Theater at the Mercury Theater in Chicago. And in just a minute, Tafadzwa is going to do a song from the show live for you when we come right back. It would be good in that show.
I wouldn't mind doing that.
School of Rock.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. I see you as one of the little kids, though.
Right. Not the teacher.
No. I see you as a little girl dressed in
her. Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Well, you're the one that said that your mom dressed you up in little girl's clothes.
I should find that picture. I think you get a kick out of it.
Yeah, you can save it. That's okay. It is 10:53, and we have with us the playwright, producer of Mother Freakin' Hood, a brand new show that's just opened in Chicago about moms, different stages of motherhood, and also Tafadzwa Diener, who is one of the performers who's going to sing for us in just a little while. Sarah, how was this received? It's played in other cities. How was it received there?
It's been received so well, not only by women, but by men, too. We honor the guys who made us mothers. so everybody can relate to it. We played originally in Lawrence, Kansas, sold out crowds. Kansas City, we got great reviews. We were accepted into the New York Musical Festival and got to play in New York. So when you're talking about all the rewrites and changes, I mean, we were writing and cutting, and they'd show up the next day and have their lines memorized. I mean, it was amazing. And we so it received really well, got great reviews. We got a nomination for Best Lyrics, which was cool. And then recently, we just went back to Kansas City. Heidi Van, our amazing and wonderful director, directed the show at her theater there in the Black Box. Got great reviews. We actually won the regional award for best musical, and here we're getting wonderful feedback. So
great.
Yeah.
So what song, Tafadzwa, are you going to perform for us?
I'm going to be singing Move the Line. It's the Act One finale, and it's Rachel pretty much finally exploding about the pickup line not moving, and yeah, all her anger is coming out.
The show is called Mother Freakin' Hood through June 11th, the Venus Cabaret Theater at the Mercury on North Southport. Take it away.
It's the first day of fourth grade, and I kiss my summer goodbye. I've got the school supplies, my kid is immunized. It's time to fly, so we're out the door by 8:04. Take on the day, but when we get to the drop, traffic comes to a stop, 'cause someone's in the way. Move the line, mama ain't got time to be running late. Molly's ready to roll, and my schedule is full, come on and move that line. Move the line, mama ain't got time, don't hesitate. Make an exit plan to get them out of the van so we can move that line. Adding to all that I do while I try not to melt down, remembering clothes in the dryer, and Molly's got choir, and my husband's coming back in town. And now the PTA has the nerve to say they need more volunteers. This school must have been built on mommy guilt. Am I falling on deaf ears? Mama ain't got time, you're sucking up my day. I'll be up until 2 with all this stuff to do. Why can't you move that line? Keep on smiling in a entertaining, always moving, entertaining. My mommy face, my mommy face, my mommy face, my mommy face. Yeah, move the line, I'm gonna take my time and enjoy the ride. I'm gonna roll real slow, take a breath, let go. I'm gonna move that line.
Very wow. Nice.
So she had to, like, other people are coming in and out of that, so she had to sing that without the other women.
The other women to, yeah. to do it. But I'm going to think of that song every time now I'm driving around. And, you know, I'm near a school drop-off zone, and that's what I'm saying while I'm in my car. Come on, move the line. Let's get going. Let's get moving here. So,
it's incredible the reactions we get to that song. It is a point of contention in every school district.
Of course. Tafadzwa, great job.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Beautiful
thank
voice.
You.
Really nice. Tafadzwa Diener and playwright, producer, Sarah Stotz. The show is Mother Freakin' Hood through June 11th at the Venus Cabaret Theater, the Mercury, 3745 North Southport. You can get tickets at mercurytheaterchicago.com or by,
our website, motherfreakinghood.com. Okay. You can get them there. It's a great Mother's Day present, even if you can get tickets today. Or, heck, you could get her the tickets, not for today, but for a future show.
There you go.
We would love that.
Is there a show today?
There is a show today. 3 o'clock matinee on Sundays and Saturdays, and then night shows Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays.
There you go. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for coming in. I really appreciate it. And Tafadzwa, great job.
Thank you
so much for the singing at this hour of the day. It is 10:58. Twana, you may have noticed that I'm a little, I sound a little stressed today.
I have noticed
a little
that.
Off today.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you feel you're off today?
I do.
Oh, why?
Because I'm concerned about that gigantic turtle that they found.
Gosh.
I'm worried about the, what are they calling it?
The car. Yeah, they gave it some weird name.
Chonk something or
Chonkosaurus.
Chonkosaurus. Yeah.
I don't, what does that mean?
Have you ever seen such a monster?
That is
like
unbelievable.
That?
Well, those things live to be 100.
And where exactly was that found?
It was.
It's on the Chicago River, but I don't know where.
It was sitting on a pile of rocks or chains or something.
Yeah, right. A big close to the shoreline with a bunch of giant chains around a stone. I don't know where it was.
I could just see something like some tourists that, you know, come down. Let's go have a picnic, and then some giant turtle eats them, and that's how it got.
It really looks.
Turtles love to sun.
That's what they were doing.
Yeah, they love to go out,
just hanging out there in the sun.
Yeah, we go to like the Morton Arboretum, and they have this nice little lake, Lake Marmo, there. And you look out on the rocks, or even near the shore, if you go there early in the morning, and all the turtles
are just sitting
there, totally sunning. It's the coolest thing you've ever seen. They're on logs, they're on rocks, anywhere in the sun.
I've just never seen a turtle that looks like he has a size 3 shell. But really, it's like a double XL.
Well, he had a muffin top, if you look at it. He was coming out of his shell.
Man.
He was pouring out
from under the shell.
I know. Yeah. I never saw that before. Well, he lives in Chicago, you know. Pizza, hot dogs, roast beef.
I'm sure he wished he had been able to eat some of those things. In the river, I'm pretty sure it was more like porta potties. Picnic tables,
bodies,
dead politicians from the 1950s. Oh. Hey, turtle, gonna be okay, Uncle Schwanny? Let's talk about the giant turtle in the river.
There's a turtle. Uncle Tommy.
Somebody texted in. It was the North Branch of the Chicago River.
North Branch, okay.
Yeah. Which you can see on Chwani's YouTube page.
That's one of I think that one has 14 views.
Wow.
I'll tell you, that would have made a nice video when we did the 2 years ago, we did the architecture tour,
right,
all up and down the North Branch there, and it would perfect video for that.
That's another show that I would like to do, by the way, sometime. I'd like to take on a boat.
That would be wonderful.
Do the entire show from a boat.
And do the tour.
And at some point, we'll sacrifice one of the listeners to the giant turtle.
Oh,
nice.
Well, that turtle's probably going to become a stop now on the architectural tour.
Of course.
They're probably going to go off the...
This replaces Chance the Snapper.
Alligator that was in Humboldt Park in the lagoon there. Yeah.
A couple of years ago. All right, that's all your turtle news. Dusting off all the songs that contain the word mom or mother in them today. What year would you think this would be? Shawnee would know this in his vast knowledge of
this song?
All things ancient.
This is probably 68 or 69. I think this was on the soundtrack to Magical Mystery Tour.
Let's see if it says here. From their 1967 EP and LP, Magical Mystery Tour.
Yeah, cool.
Very nice. I like this one. And happy Mother's Day.
We forgot Sophia Petrillo as a great mother from Golden Girls.
Don't even get me started on the Golden Girls.
Picture it. Sicily. 1939.
Pussycat. I want somebody to call me. I want somebody to call me Pussycat.
Pussycat. Oh, I'm sure you have.
I'm pretty sure I haven't. Seems like that would be something that I would remember. Talking about names, though, the Social Security Administration, because I like to follow everything that they do. Uh-huh. It's becoming more and more important to me as I get older. They released the 20 most popular baby names of last year. Andy, what would you think? You're more attuned. Your friends are probably
having kids and stuff
now.
Yeah.
Are you hearing or seeing names popping up?
There's always some different ones. I mean, like Liam is usually a big one.
The number one baby boy name from last year. Liam.
Okay. That was number one.
Liam.
There's a lot of Liams out there, yeah. A
lot of Irish kind of names.
Yeah.
Landon is a big name now.
Not on the list.
I'm just saying.
Well, you don't have to get defensive about it.
No, I'm just, well, you know, traditional names are coming back. Some of those, like Mildreds and Agneses, are coming back.
None of those are on the list.
Or perhaps there's many, many Shelbys then. I don't know.
I would like to see people start to name their baby boys as a first name, Shawnee.
Oh, yeah.
Some people actually think that's my real first name.
The number two baby boy name is Noah.
Hmm. Yeah, I know a Noah.
Yeah.
I know a Noah.
Oliver is number three. Yes. I know several people.
Several Olivers.
Yep. Name their kids Oliver.
Yep.
It's not on this list, but you know another name that I'll bet I know four or five people who named their kids, their boys, Leonardo.
Hmm. Oh.
Isn't that unusual?
Yeah, Leo.
James is the number four name.
Yeah, that's coming back. That was gone for a while, but that one's coming back.
You're James.
That's why I use that as when I write and in the theater in my program, I go as James Toronto. Yeah. It's very pretentious.
I would pay money to have Dean on any of these lists. I think I have damaged as a child that my name would never show up unless like this. When you go to the stores where you could buy...
Yeah, you said you couldn't get a license plate.
The little souvenir license plates with your name on them. You never, ever saw a Dean, a keychain.
Really?
Never.
I would think that was fairly...
Never. No.
Although, who is a real... I mean, besides from you, are...
Dean Martin.
Well, Dino, right. Yeah, that wasn't really his name, though. He used it, but his real name was Dino. And then there was Dean Jagger was an actor.
Yeah.
But there's really not a lot of Deans.
Okay.
Well, I'm just saying, right?
Well, what about Dean Martin?
That's what we just said.
Yeah. Well,
Shwani, the show's on WGN 720 if you want to listen.
I have a newsroom to run.
He's busy listening to Jane Pauley right now. Shwani likes to watch Jane Pauley during the show.
He just said, what about Edith Bunker? That was from 20 minutes ago.
Andy, what's your guess? The number one baby girl name?
Madison.
Oh, I know what it is.
Not on the list.
Not on the list.
Madison is
not on
the list.
Make the list.
What's your guess, Elton?
Number one girl's name, I would say Susan.
Not on the list.
Not on the list.
Okay, Mr. Smarty Pants, I know what it is.
Olivia.
Olivia.
It's
Olivia.
Mm-hmm. Olivia.
Hmm. Yeah. We had the story yesterday.
Oh. Well, that's not fair. I mean, my God. What are the girls' names then?
Olivia's number one. Emma is number two.
See these traditional names.
Charlotte number three.
Princess Charlotte.
Amelia is number four. And Sophia.
Oh, Sophia.
Sophia's number five.
Picture it. Sicily.
I would like to see.
I know a Sophia. I know. I do know some. I know someone has all of those names.
All five of them?
Yeah, I know different people that.
Oh, different people.
Yeah, not one person that has five names.
I didn't know.
Yeah, no.
It's interesting. I like to see some of the old school names come back. I like to see Elsa.
Like Elsa Lanchester.
I like to see Elsa come back. I like to see Agnes.
I do hear.
I like to see a resurgence of Agnes's.
How about Myrtle?
Myrtle
would be nice.
That's an old school name.
Mildred.
And you know what I'm thinking of when I'm thinking of these old school names? I'm thinking, what were the first names of my grade school teachers? Because they all had those names.
Yeah. I had my third grade teacher was Gladys.
Gladys is one. Gladys. Definitely.
Yep. I had a Dolores, my second grade teacher.
Yeah.
Somebody.
Fourth grade teacher was Mary, as I recall.
I had fourth grade was Ruth for me. Ruth's kind of
Ruth is a traditional name.
Yeah,
it's kind of an old school name. Somebody texted in, Dean, how could you feel bad about your name? You had a whole line of dairy products named after you.
That's right.
True.
Is Dean still around?
I don't know.
I've seen Dean's trucks.
Okay.
Yeah, dairy trucks.
Yeah. It's my side hustle. Someone said they would like to see the name Hazel come back.
Hi, Mr. B. Shirley Booth. Shirley's not a bit.
Hazel. That's a fantastic name. Oh, and somebody else said my niece just named her daughter Hazel.
Oh, that's cool.
Very nice.
You have to have the right last name for some of those names, too, though, you know. You know, Hazel blank.
Somebody said that the name Elsa might be coming back because it's the name of the main character in the Disney movie Frozen. Yep. Well, that's true.
Oh. That's very true.
On the show Blacklist with James Spader, there's a young girl's character whose name is Agnes.
847 area code says, my mom was born in 1913 and her name was Myrtle Agnes.
Oh, there you go. Myrtle Agnes.
Myrtle
a
Agnes.
Double, daily double there.
That's a good one.
I had a great Aunt Emma, and my mother's mother's name, my grandmother, was Clara.
Oh, Clara's Clara. Not bad. Clara, like Clara from Mayberry.
Clara Edwards, right.
Aunt B's nemesis.
That's right. Yes, Clara Edwards.
I hated her.
And she started as Clara Johnson, actually. They kept changing her name, like two or three different names.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I hated Clara. Why was she and Aunt B, why were they friends? They were always competing.
She was a nasty lady.
Yeah.
Busybody.
Oh, defined busybody. Oh, she's always, you know, talking about, you know, there's a couple of episodes where she's totally intruding on Andy's life.
Right.
It's terrible.
Well, Andy Griffith's show is one of the most beloved shows there is, but I've said before that I have a problem with that Andy lies all the time on that show. He is lying to everybody.
Yeah.
White lies to, you know, try to make the situation better. But, could there be a bigger liar on that show than... I'm surprised Opie turned out as well as he did.
Well, we don't know what really happened to him, though.
Well, he won an Academy Award. Yeah, became a director.
The actress who played Clara was later in Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, wow.
In The Coven. She was like in the desert.
That's a good place for her.
The devil worshiper, yeah.
That's a good place.
Hope Summers.
Hope Summers, yeah. She was in a MASH episode, too.
Yeah.
309 area code. My grandmother and wife's name were Flora.
Hmm. Florence isn't a bad name.
Florence. No, Flora.
Flora. I don't
Flora.
Have to say
Flora.
Like, yeah, Florence Henderson earlier. We
you know talking. What I like? Flora Bell.
Flora Bell.
Who is Flora Bell? Schwani, you would. Was that one of the Three Stooges? One of the
cartoon? Yeah, one of the girlfriends of right.
Was she the one that said, "Let's go places
the
and
neat
eat things"?
Yes, I think so. Curly's girlfriend,
Flora Bell. I'm Dora Bell.
No, and then there was Maggie, Aggie, and Baggy.
We're idiots.
I'm Maggie. Baggy. I'm Maggie. I'm Baggy.
Classic shows. The 815 area code says my grandmother's name was Evangeline. That's a beautiful name.
Nice.
My mother's name was Angeline. Called her Anne.
But that was her real name.
Well, her real name in Greek was Angelikoula.
Oof.
Angelikoula. So it was translated would be Angeline, but everybody called her Kula.
My mom was born here, but she was Polish, and I found out once again right around when she was sick and I was going through a lot of her stuff. On her birth certificate, her name is a Polish name called Władysława.
Wow.
I couldn't even there's so many consonants. I couldn't even pronounce it. I had to ask a Polish woman.
That's a beautiful name, though.
Władysława.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, but then she went as Lorraine. I don't know if that.
What?
Yeah. I don't know if that translates or she just picked it, but I don't think she wanted to go as Władysława, you know, in, you know, especially at that time when
you're
trying to
be American. Right?
Yeah. But well, I saw that. I was like, it's with a W. I was like, whoa, Władysława.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's a fantastic name.
And then her last name, her maiden name, was Kielbasa.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
My dad used to call her Laurie Sausage.
Władysława?
Władysława Kielbasa.
Wow.
Yeah.
Little Władysława.
Little Wadi.
Dressing up her little son as a little girl.
Right.
Is what we learned. That's my takeaway on today's show.
Oh, is it?
Jim gave us the story of how his mom used to dress him up as a little girl.
She wanted a girl. She got a hairy little boy.
Wow, look at this. Boy, the phone line's exploding on this. My mom's name is Carly. That's a pretty name.
Oh, like Carly Simon.
Carly, spelled differently, but the same.
Yeah.
My 3-year-old granddaughter's name is Lorelei. That's kind of beautiful.
Let's live together.
281, Julia Roberts' children are named Hazel and Phineas.
Yeah.
I love that.
Fiona is a name I've been hearing a lot, too. Yeah. Fiona.
Here's one. My grandmother's names were Beulah and Gazelle.
Beulah.
That's cool.
Beulah. What was the actress from It's a Wonderful Life? Beulah Bondi.
Beulah Bondi.
Beulah Bondi.
Beulah Bondi. She played Jimmy Stewart's mother.
Yeah.
Mrs. Bailey.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll just add, this has nothing to do with the conversation. 773. I love you guys. I listen every Sunday morning.
Oh, that's nice. Just throw that in there.
I just want to throw a compliment. My granddaughter's name is Millie.
Oh, nice.
After the last female born in her family, Mildred.
Mildred, right.
Mildred's a good name. I have a friend whose 1-year-old granddaughter is named Story.
Story.
Apparently, the friend is Gwyneth Paltrow. Doesn't it?
Apple.
Her kids got like
Apple.
Crazy showbiz names.
Yeah.
Estelle, Hermione, Mabel. Oh, Mabel.
Mabel.
Here's one. My mom is Ethel. My grandmother is Mabel.
Ethel.
I love that. And here's another one. Interesting. 815. I know 3 friends who each have grandchildren named Dean.
Oh, there you go. Look at. They might have to start making those license plates and those keychains.
It's too late for me.
Well, you can still get one.
The only license plates that I'll get are the ones that I make when they finally throw me in jail. There's they're all younger than 19. It's a resurgence of the name.
Wow.
I think to have a resurgence, you have to have
Is your real name resurgent? Dean?
Yes.
It's, I mean, that is on your birth certificate.
On my birth
certificate. And where did that, why? Was there a Dean? I mean,
no.
It just seems like a...
They just liked it.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just liked it. My middle name, legal middle name is Patrick.
Wow.
Which is weird, considering my ethnic background.
Right. Dean Patrick.
And I asked my parents why they chose that. And they said, well, we thought you were going to be born on St. Patrick's Day. You were originally supposed to be born on St. Patrick's Day. I came 2 weeks after that. They had 2 weeks to think of a different name.
I just throw Patrick.
It's like, that's good enough.
I don't think people thought about it that much.
That's the problem when you're the youngest child. At some point, at that point, they don't care anymore.
They ran out of names.
Yeah, give them some cigarettes. It's okay. There is Ralph Cramden, the Honeymooners with Alice's mom. One of the great characters of all time.
She was so mean to him.
Fantastic. Good stuff.
He walks in one time with a suitcase. She goes, what is that, your new lunchbox?
And then that the episode where Ralph finds all the money on the bus and she shows up. Sonny boy.
Oh, you heard I got the money, huh?
Good stuff. It's 11:40. This is Dean Richards. Coming up just after 12 o'clock, our one-on-one interview with Michael J. Fox. Brand new documentary on his career and his life and how he is dealing with Parkinson's disease. Now the movie is streaming on Apple TV Plus. It's also at the Gene Siskel Film Center if you want to see it in a conventional theater. It's a powerful documentary, really very moving, heartbreaking at times. When you see the highs that, where his career took him with Back to the Future and all the film projects that he was involved in, the TV show Family Ties. And then at the age of 29, diagnosed with Parkinson's disease and, how he dealt with it at the time and how he is dealing with it now. It's a powerful interview that we'll play the whole interview for you today. And tomorrow on the WGN TV Morning News, I'm going to show some snippets of the interview. So you can see his physical condition right now.
Was it tough?
It was tough. It was a tough interview to do because his tremors, because of Parkinson's disease, are very pronounced. And you just want to try to help him.
Can you understand him? Like when he's answering?
You'll hear in the interview in a minute. It's a little bit tough to understand him.
Yeah.
Because his... along with his physical tremors of his arms and his body, his voice is also very shaky.
Yeah.
But I think you can understand. I think you can make out what he's saying. So we'll get to that coming up in just a little while. But, think about that. He was like the A-list of A-listers.
When he exploded between... Think about it. He had Family Ties and Back to the Future at the same time.
Yeah.
Number one film, number one show.
Yeah.
And then, even when he was diagnosed, he had another comeback then with Spin City.
Spin City, right.
Which was a popular show as well.
Yeah, where he talks a little bit in the interview about, trying to hide his tremors when he was doing Spin City, that they would shoot the show, to not feature his hand movements. Or they would shoot it so he was behind a chair or something so you couldn't see what was going on. And he said that, at some point, it was too difficult to live this life of deception. And he became really the first to come out and say, I have Parkinson's disease, and to put a public face on it.
I always thought that his career would have developed where he would have become a serious actor, like a lot of comedians or comic actors do. And I think he would have won an Academy Award somewhere down the line if he had not had that disease and allowed to continue. I think he would have been moving
on
in that direction.
On his trajectory.
Like Tom Hanks.
I agree. I agree. He would have definitely gone in that direction.
Yeah.
I was watching part of the, in the documentary, they show a clip of when he won the Emmy Award for Family Ties. And he gets up on the stage and he's so excited. He goes, oh, this is great. He said, I feel 4 feet tall. Because he was not a tall man.
Yeah.
But it was an honor to speak to him. You think you have problems in your life? You know, whatever little things that are going on in your life that you think are insurmountable and that you can't deal with it. After I watched this movie, you know, I came out feeling there's not one thing in the world that I can complain about. This guy is living his life like this and dealing with whatever comes along in a forthright, honest, I think a very healthy way. He makes fun of it. He jokes about it.
He was on an episode a few years ago on Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David. And basically he was making fun. The whole episode was about him and his Parkinson's.
Yeah.
And how it was making noise.
Yeah.
I mean, he was making fun of it.
I think in a way that's kind of helpful.
Yeah.
Don't you? I mean, when you've got something like that, you can sit and mope and, give yourself a pity party. Or you can say, this is what it is. I'm dealing with it. And I'm going to move on. And he demystified it. He by coming out and making it public, he made it easier for other people who have Parkinson's disease to not feel shame about having the disease or having tremors. He just very openly he's doing coming on TV shows like ours and talking about this, and he doesn't care about the tremors.
Well, the key thing that he has said too, in as he's been publicizing this, is that you don't die from Parkinson's, you die with Parkinson's, in that he said over the last year or so, he's had more ailments and infirmities, not because of Parkinson's, but because of Parkinson's, he's fallen. He's broken his shoulder a couple of times. He broke his wrist. He's hit his head, because you don't realize those tremors can be
so violent. Right.
And they're so unpredictable. There's a scene I've seen where he's walking down the street and just violently falls because it takes over.
Right. Well, I can't recommend this movie enough. I gave it a Dean's List A+.
Wow.
I really loved it for the depth of it, the gravity of it, of dealing with a very serious subject in a very open and honest way. But I also liked his lightheartedness about it and humanizing it. He humanized the disease, really.
Wow.
People said, "Oh, this is what Michael J. Fox had. Look what he's doing. Maybe I can do that too."
And now you hear, Neil Diamond recently said it. Now Richard Lewis recently announced he has Parkinson's.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So anyway, we'll get to our interview with Michael J. Fox in just a bit. Elton Jim Toronto, thespian and Jeff nominated actor.
I didn't want to say anything, but when you introduced me off the air, when the two people from the theater came in, you didn't really.
That I said that you were Jeff.
You didn't.
I didn't say you were Jeff.
You just said I was in a play, but you didn't say that I was Jeff nominated.
Well, I
just wanted to point.
I didn't
want
to throw it in their faces. That
why?
Do you do that now when you meet people?
No, but that's the new line, my first line of my bio in the program.
He just walks around to people he doesn't know on the street.
Hi, Jeff Nominated.
I'm Jeff Nominated, James Toronto, actor, currently starring in The Crucible at the Invictus Theater Company. Jim is starting in a new production, which is in previews now. We'll talk about that when we come right back. I'm playing this so later on when you celebrate Mother's Day in your houses today. Just quote lines from this song, and you will come off as being the most romantic person ever. Just steal lines from Paul McCartney. It can be any Paul McCartney or Beatles song, and it'll work. Just perfectly. You walk up to your wife, mother of your kids, and go,
"Yesterday, love was such an easy game to play."
She won't. won't even recognize that it was a song. She'll just go, "Oh, you're so romantic."
Yeah, if you don't sing it in, if you don't sing it with tune, it's just a nice little, it's a nice little phrase.
Yeah, honey, you know what? Yesterday, all my troubles seemed so far away.
Listen to what the man said. We're gonna get high, high, high
for a band on the run. Oh, you're so romantic.
You know, honey, live and let die.
Well, most any Paul McCartney.
You know, Dean, you'd think that people would have had enough of silly love songs. But I look around me, and I see it isn't
so. It isn't so. Yeah.
Oh, no.
11:52. I want to break the bad news to the audience slowly.
Uh-oh.
Elton Jim Toronto has to leave at 12 o'clock.
No, I don't.
Really?
I could stay if you want me to.
You can.
Yeah.
You're welcome to.
Yeah. I don't have to leave.
I thought you had to go to a performance.
No, I because it's...
I was hoping you had to go to a performance.
No, I mean, if you want me to, I'll leave.
Half to, according to half the people on the text line, they were hoping you had to leave at 12.
Oh, my usual fans came out, huh?
you're welcome to stay.
Yeah, I can stay.
Okay.
I have time.
Well, never mind then.
Yeah. Now the bad news. Now the good news. That was the.
Well, now we have to reconstruct the whole rest of the show.
Damn.
Tell me about the Crucible.
Oh, okay.
The play in which you are starring.
Yeah, co-starring.
Now that's what this is. What I was this is. I thought you were leaving at 12, so
no.
I'd leave you a few minutes here to talk about the show that you're starring in.
Yeah.
Carrying the rest of the cast.
Oh, no, don't say that, because this is a big... There's 19 people.
Wow.
There are 19 people.
That's a big show.
In this cast. With the, you know, the great thing about The Crucible, which was written by Arthur Miller, and most people will maybe have never seen it on stage, but you most likely read it in high school or seen it in a high school production, because it's great for theater participation. You got 19 people in a play. So if you're a theater director in high school, you say, let's do The Crucible, because I can get like 19 kids.
A lot of people.
A lot of cat. And there's equally equal part male roles as well as female roles. But as I said, what I'm excited about this production, which is now in previews, we open this Friday, and we run through June 11th at the Invictus Theater in the Edgewater neighborhood of Chicago. But what's so exciting about it is there's a girl who's in high school who is in this play, and then there are people in their 60s and 70s. So it runs, you know, the gamut of experience. As I said before, not in a joking manner, really, I'm very excited, and it makes me raise my game up. A lot of talented people here who have won Jeff Awards, who have been nominated for Jeff Awards. So, and there's a great intensity. As I said, this play is intense, this witch hunt. And, this play was written, 70 years ago this year. And I've got a line that it's so resonating today. One of my lines is, "You must understand, sir, that a person is either with this court or he must be counted against it. There is no road between."
Wow.
You know, I mean, that is right today.
Yeah.
That comes right out of today's lines. And so this play, even though it was written so many years ago, still resonates. And, you know, it's all about the Salem witch hunts. And in the last couple of months, I've seen that term and heard that term used. When Donald Trump was indicted in New York, he went to a rally, and behind him, his supporters had signs that said, "Witch hunt." Now, George Santos, the representative from New York, he was just indicted, and he said, "This is a witch hunt."
Yep.
So, I mean, it's
popular.
You're hearing this phrase.
And you hear pretty often in different political debates, you're either with us or against
us. I mean, and if you remember, that's what George Bush said when we were about to attack after the 9/11. You're either with us or against us. And so, so much of that resonates. And as I said, I've been to Salem in Massachusetts where this took place. And I've actually seen, we talked about cemeteries. One of the characters because this play, even though it's fictionalized, all the characters' names in The Crucible really were involved in the Salem witch trials and the witch hunts. They were hung. And one of the actual people that's one of the judges in the play, I saw his grave, which, you know, this takes place in 1692.
Wow.
And they're still there. So, yeah, it's a very intense play. It's but it's very relevant. And it makes us look at the theocracies, which we are seeing in today's society as well as hysteria and people jumping, you know, on a bandwagon and people, I mean, you know, the blacklist in the 50s and 60s, especially in the 50s, I mean, it took place in Hollywood and in the arts mostly because a lot of, you know, creative people are open-minded. And so they were looking, you know, they were looking at different ideologies at that time. And so, and from McCarthy's standpoint, how can I get publicity for my cause? Oh, I'm going to call Gary Cooper up on the stage.
I'll call out famous people, you know, on that. So you'll see the comparisons.
Yeah.
When you see the show, starting, it's in previews now.
We're in previews.
It opens
on Friday the 19th.
And to get and more information.
It's Invictus, Invictus Theater with an R-E. company.com and then /Crucible take you right to the page. And you even see a nice picture of the whole cast and James Toronto.
Yeah, click on it anyway, though.
I was so used to saying I'm Dave Schwann in for Don Kleppen yesterday that it just slipped there. So, yes, I am Dave Schwann on Chicago's very own 720 WGN and WGNradio.com.
Did you ever have a dog?
No, I didn't. And I wanted a dog when in the worst way when I was a kid, but I never had one. Never
any
had
pet at all, Swanee?
A goldfish.
Would you win that at a carnival?
I think I may have got it at the school fun fair.
Exactly.
Or something
that's
like
exactly
that.
Where you got those.
He threw a ping pong ball into the bowl.
Those things always live like a day.
Yeah.
The ones that you got from those. Yeah.
They didn't last long. Have you ever had pets?
Oh yeah, we have cats. We had a cat. Oh. We had Thames the cat, who passed away almost 8 years ago, and now we have Grimsby the cat.
That's right, because when we came to your house to look at your collection of junk that you've got in your house. It's got a lot of Elton John memorabilia.
Why does that not surprise me?
As you might expect.
Yeah.
It's how I imagine Schwanee's house, just loaded with
Andy Griffith stuff.
Andy Griffith.
And Superman.
You a big Superman guy?
I like, the George Reeves stuff.
Oh.
And, of course, the Stooges.
But I believe you put the cat away.
Well, we put her in a room.
Super allergic.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you were allergic, right?
I still am.
Yeah.
You could kill me if you brought your cat.
I'll rub her on my body before I come in here the next time to see what happens.
Thanks for that visual image. My doctor, you know, I did an allergy test, where they like scratch up your arm.
Yeah.
And then they put different stuff on it to see what you react to. Super allergic to cats and super allergic to horse dander, of all things.
Oh, horse! You're not around horses, though, are you?
No.
Well, then
I stay away from horses. But I was in Italy. I went on a little horse and buggy ride, and apparently the person, the blanket that they had inside the buggy was also one that they used to put on the horse. Because I got in the buggy, and suddenly I started having this reaction.
What was the reaction?
Literally, my throat was closing. It was closing.
EpiPen things?
Well, we're in the middle of some little village in Italy, like trying to do charades at a pharmacy because they didn't speak English.
Oh, my God.
To explain what was happening, and they gave me Benadryl.
Could you feel it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought that was going to be it.
Oh, my goodness.
I thought that was going to be it. So then I did the test. That's why I did the test, to see if I was allergic to anything else. And the doctor said, well, you should carry an EpiPen because... a horse or a cat could kill you.
Could kill you?
Yeah.
Did you have a dog when you were growing up?
Yeah.
Oh, you did? What was your dog's name?
Lucy.
Lucy.
Yeah.
What kind of dog?
It was my last dog, was Lucy. I've had many dogs. She was a white German Shepherd.
Oh, wow.
Beautiful, 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 beautiful.
The Westminster Kennel Club was just down this week.
Yeah. Guinness Book of World Records, 20?
Yeah.
just released what they believe to be the oldest dog ever, a Portuguese dog named Bobby, who they believe to be 31 years old.
Wow. That's really exceptional for a dog.
I've never heard of a dog.
It's 200 years in animal in human life.
Yeah.
Right? Seven, or is that horses?
No, 7 years for a dog.
Okay.
The dog is living in a rural village in southern Portugal.
Is he drinking or eating yogurt like those Russians did in the 70s?
Maybe.
Those Danone commercials?
It's a Portuguese... Portuguese, does it say the breed? It doesn't say the breed. Looks a little like a lab, but it's said to be 31 years old.
Wow. Because dogs, what, about maybe 18, 19? Do they even
That's
that long?
Pushing it.
Oh, is it?
I think most are in the 12 to 15 year range.
Okay. Yeah, because cats usually go, cats can go to about, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20 sometimes.
Yeah. This dog should get together with that fat turtle on the river. One of the few days that I miss being over at the Tribune Tower, being at that old dump where we used to work.
I don't know why you hated that place so much. I used to love that studio on the street.
Seeing people strolling by on Mother's Day morning, you know, clearly out, going to get some nice Sunday brunch.
Their Sunday go-to-meeting hats and everything.
They would get all dressed up, and they would come downtown and stroll the avenue. And I do miss that. Not so much when people would pull their pants down and stick their butts on the window. That part I didn't.
Which did happen.
Did happen.
Yes, it did happen.
Amazing regularity. Frequency.
Yes. That,
right.
It's very strange.
Happy Mother's Day to all celebrating today.
So what will Dean do on a Mother's Day since your mom passed away? Will you think about her? Will you cook something in her honor?
I was going to, and then I thought I'm too lazy. It's my day off. You know what I did yesterday? I was someplace, you know, shopping. I like to go shop on Saturday morning. And someplace had some beautiful potted calla lilies, which were my mother's favorite flowers. So I bought a big pot of calla lilies.
Oh, that's nice.
And I've got them in my house right now to little... I would have normally given them to her.
Right.
Since she is also at my house.
Living with you now.
As we discussed, her ashes are in my house.
In the break front next to the china.
She's right next to the water pitcher, in case you're looking for her.
The crystal.
Breaking in my house, and you want to know where she is? I got some nice calla lilies right near her. So, yeah, it'll be nice. I wonder, you know, if I were to ask my mom, what do you want to do for Mother's Day? What the tradition was, probably for like 20 years before she passed away, we would go to the garden center, and she would pick out what she wanted to put in the garden. She had a beautiful yard, but she couldn't physically do all the planting and gardening anymore. So we would pick out what she wanted. She always wanted her tomato plants and cucumbers and, you know, like that. We pick it all out, and then I would plant her garden, and she would make a nice lunch.
Do you have a green thumb?
I do.
Do you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good in the
garden. Do you have a garden in your house? At your house?
I do.
I wouldn't know. I've never been invited.
Well, no, let's keep it that way. I think a little distance is probably good.
But do you? Just plant. I mean, you plant.
I have perennial things.
So you have flowers as well as like vegetables.
But I put. I look forward to putting the vegetables in.
But you have flowers too.
Every year. I do have flowers and some bushes. I was working on my clematis vines.
There's a shot for that now.
Yes, yes. I think you might be thinking of something else. These, you know, beautiful. Mine are purple. They come in different colors. But these clematis plants are ones that grow on vines.
Ah.
So they grow upward. And I have trellises. And then I put some fishing wire above the trellises.
Oh.
So these vines climb all the way up to the top of my garage. It's really quite beautiful. And when they're in a full bloom, it's nothing but these beautiful purple flowers.
So the fishing wire is strong enough to stand... Well, it doesn't go limp.
No, I have attached the fishing line. To the top of the garage.
Oh, to the top of the garage.
From the trellis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And these clematis plants, it'll grab right onto the fishing line and wrap itself around.
It's amazing how we have those in our yard too. My wife bought those little trellises that are round.
Yeah.
And those things grow in a second.
Right. They are attracted. It really is quite amazing.
It is.
How they know.
To where to go.
Where to go.
Yeah.
And they do. So, yeah, I have perennial flowers like that in my yard. I've got, what else do I have in there? I've got a bunch of irises. I've got just all kinds of things that come back every year. I'm not trying to create too much work for myself.
Right.
But I really look forward to the fresh tomatoes, fresh cucumbers, green peppers. What I love going outside, picking a nice fresh salad and having a nice salad.
So do you actually, can you make, do you grow lettuce?
I don't grow lettuce, but I grow spinach and Swiss chard.
Oh.
Greens.
Wow.
So you can make like a nice
spinach salad.
Nice spinach salad or something like
that. Now, have you ever had vines on your house?
I don't, I'm not a fan of that because I've heard that they dig themselves into the mortar. And can tear up.
Because one year, our next door neighbor does, and they let it grow quite a bit. So it must have flipped over to us, and so suddenly on the side of our house, right next to our neighbor, they started to grow, and those things grow very quickly before you know it. And it's that side of the house that I don't drive. The drive is on the other side, so I rarely see that side.
Right.
So one day I look out, and the whole house is covered.
Yeah.
And then we start hearing these birds. Well, because we have this little window on the second floor, they built a nest on the sill because they were covered by the vines. So it was perfect for them. So finally the nest leaves, and I'm like, well, I'm going to take these vines down because, like you said, I heard it can take damage. Well, I'm assuming that these vines are like the ones at Wrigley Field. I got these big clippers and I got this ladder because I'm going to have to really cut these vines down. I touched one. They're just on by suction.
Yeah.
I grabbed one by accident. The whole house. I was covered in vines.
Yeah.
They all fell down in two seconds.
And attached themselves to you?
I thought that they were embedded on the house. I would have to cut these things.
Yeah.
I just touched one leaf. And the whole thing came tumbling down.
It's amazing.
These little suction cups kept them.
It's amazing.
I couldn't believe that.
Well, these clematis plants that I have, though, there are little spirally tentacles, I guess you might say.
Right.
That they grow that grab onto the trellis or the fishing line that I've put up.
Yeah.
They grab onto it, and that's how they grow. But I've had morning glories. Those are ones that also grow on fences and things like that. I foolishly put them in one year. They grew out of control.
It's unbelievable.
You're about to get the haircut of your life.
I know.
I cut them all down. I got rid of them.
Yeah, it's amazing though how fast
it is.
Well, even this year, one day I was looking, the hostas weren't there. I didn't look for 2 days. Boom. Completely filled in.
Yeah.
I'm like, whoa. I'd love to have a camera.
Yeah, hostas are another. I have a few hostas, but those I control. I'd have to dig them out every year and separate them every year.
Yeah.
Because they get too out of control. 12:21 here on your gardening station.
Botany hour.
Green Thumb Radio, as we like to call it. Coming up, my interview with Michael J. Fox. And how you can bid on some special experiences with some broadcast, Chicago and national broadcast experiences. Let's put it that way. That's all coming up next. 24, Dean Richards' Mother's Day show. We'll get into some Mother's Day recipes, favorite things that your mom made. We'll be thinking about that. And also my one-on-one interview with Michael J. Fox, which we will also feature, by the way, tomorrow on the WGN TV Morning News. So you'll be able to actually see what kind of physical condition Michael J. Fox is in right now and to see his tremors. Sounds weird to say that, but just so you better understand the disease. That'll be tomorrow morning on WGN television. So there's a big auction that's going on for the Museum of Broadcast Communication. They're in a period of transition right now. You know, they had several locations, the River City in the South.
I remember when the first I went there, when it first was there, it was like in a condo building.
They were over at the in the old Chicago Public Library building, the Cultural Center. Which was a fantastic spot. And then they moved to their own location at, I believe, 360 North State Street. They just sold the building there.
I didn't know that.
They sold it. So they're looking for a new location right now. I don't really understand, you know, I don't know all the details, so I'm not going to speculate why they sold or what's happened there. But that location is no longer the Museum of Broadcast Communications, but the museum itself is continuing to function. And they are doing this, what they're calling the 40 for 40 live auction. They put 40 different experiences, broadcast experiences, on their website that you can bid on, and there's some pretty cool things here.
I was just wondering, like at the museum itself, like the jacket that you wore when you taped
Bozo Gar and Ray,
is that in there?
It should be.
Shouldn't it be?
It should be.
Yeah.
The jacket that I wore, I did donate the socks that I was wearing right. that day.
But the jacket, I think, you should, you know, you could, they could have a mannequin with like bald head. Maybe your glasses, maybe a pair of your glasses.
I'll just tell you a little story. The jacket that I was wearing to Bozo Gar and Ray is the same jacket that I wore when they made me a blue man.
Oh, really?
If you've ever seen that.
The Blue Man Group?
We have that on the TV website where they turned me into a blue man. And I had blue junk all over that suit that I was wearing that day.
There you go. So it's extra.
So fortunately it came out. But there were many broadcast experiences just from that suit.
Right.
So, yeah.
You belong.
You're right. It should be in the museum.
It should be. I mean, that show is the longest locally produced. That show itself now is becoming almost as long on the air as Bozo was.
That's not far from
it's true. Nearing its 30th anniversary.
Bozo was on for 40 years.
Yeah, and your show's been at least for 20.
12. No, it's been like about 12 or 13.
Feels like 20.
That's the truth. You'd think you'd learn the name of it by now. Anywho, all of the stuff that was on display there, Bozo's costume, Ray
they
Rainer,
had all of
Cuddly Dudley,
DJ and Dirty Dragon's puppets.
The puppets, Garfield Goose puppets, all that's in storage right now, and I'm sure they'll find a new location soon, and it'll all be back on display. But in the meantime, this auction is kind of cool. One of the auction items is lunch with Henry Winkler.
What?
With the Fonz in L.A.
In L.A.?
Lunch with Henry Winkler in L.A. or New York.
Oh, wow.
The current bid on it is $3,750.
You know, have you seen him in Barry?
Yes, he's amazing.
He's excellent in that
show. He's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't write him off as just the Fonz.
No, I wouldn't even say Fonz anymore.
He's quite the actor. He's quite the actor. So that's one of the items that you can go.
I have to get to L.A. and New York, though, right?
I don't know the details of it. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. It's still a cool thing.
No kidding.
Two tickets to a live taping of The Late Show with Stephen Colbert.
Oh.
Now they are on strike.
They're on
hiatus. Shut that down right now.
Oops.
But I imagine once they're back up and running again. John Oliver's show.
Oh.
Two tickets to a live taping of Kelly and Mark. Here's one you want to bet on. A private behind-the-scenes tour of the WGN studios where you can watch the WGN morning news live in studio.
That means you.
That means me.
Wow. So you are actually a auction item.
Sort of. Well,
quasi.
Yeah, with the rest of the morning.
You are adjacent.
With the rest of the.
You're an auction adjacent.
Yeah. Now, the current bid on this is $1,300.
Wow.
If you're bidding over $3,000 for Henry Winkler, you could cough up a little more for the morning show.
Right. Come on. Let's go.
Show some local love.
Right. Look at that. Look at that star power.
I will personally walk you around and show you.
Where you filmed Bo's Gar.
Where some of the dirt happens around the building. I mean, most of the tours, they show you, here's Studio One, where right. we did Bozo.
Yeah.
Here's Studio Two, where we do the news. Here's News Nation. Here's this or that. I'll show you where some of the really dirty, down and dirty stuff goes on behind the scenes. But you gotta put a bid in.
Yeah, here. Come on.
And the money goes to the museum. But you can go to museum.tv. That's probably the easiest way to find the website. If you go to museum.tv, you can find there's a link and you can.
Now, where's your dinner with Dean?
Well, apparently nobody wanted to have dinner with him. Apparently people have heard what my table manners are like.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
What would you want for that?
Personally, I think I should pay somebody. I think that's how it should.
People are paying not to go with you.
People should cough up some money for the museum not to have dinner with me. That would make more sense.
I'll be here at 7 o'clock on Saturday. If you don't come,
right,
you
right.
give money.
If, right. You can also bid, by the way, on to do the same thing with the WGN Evening News. With Ray Cortopassi and Micah Mater.
Micah's back.
Tom Skilling. He's got about a chance to meet Tom Skilling.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
Yeah. Hey, Micah. Micah's back. It's been a while.
She is.
Yeah.
She is. She had back surgery, so she was out for medical reasons. But, there's a lot of cool things on here. Take a look. Museum.tv. We continue now at 12:37. We present to you one of our A-list interviews, and I was delighted when I got a call from Apple TV that I want to interview Michael J. Fox. He's doing very limited interviews for local stations, very, very few, and WGN was one of the stations that they chose to offer an opportunity to talk with this Emmy Award-winning actor who we probably got to know best from the TV show Family Ties, but went on to great movie success with films like Back to the Future and so many others. When he was at the age of 29, diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. Of course, I'm talking about Michael J. Fox. And there's a new documentary that just came out on Friday on Apple TV Plus, but it's also showing at the Gene Siskel Film Center downtown, if you prefer to see it on a big screen, that this documentary is about 90 minutes long and talks about his career and his life. The film takes you through the highs of his career and then what happened to him almost 25 years ago, 27 years ago, when he got the diagnosis of Parkinson's disease, how he dealt with it as he continued to try to work and hide the disease. And now that the disease is progressing, he's just decided to tell this story and to hold nothing back. That's really what this documentary does. It's a story about courage and honesty, really. And he does it with some amount of humor to it. He's not throwing pity parties for himself. He's dealing with what comes along. He and his wife Tracy and his family in dealing with all of this. So I did a Zoom interview with him, and the first thing that I asked him was about being so public with something which is so personal. Why you decided to go so public with something that it would just be easy to live with whatever you have to live and not have to deal with all the public attention to it?
This is a common misreading of it among really smart people that still don't get that. But I had no choice. I had no choice to kept a secret for 7 years, and it was literally like steam ripping at the seams. It was just, I stuffed that bag with so much deception that it just exploded. Because I couldn't keep it. I was doing Spin City, and I was my whole life I was trying to keep my left hand still. So it became just very difficult. And then I also had tabloid people that were meet me at the door as I came out to go to work in the morning, screaming like, "What about the Parkinson's?" Like I'd run over their baby with a truck or something. I don't know how it related to their lives. But they were really angry that I hadn't shared my diagnosis. And I didn't want to reward them, but I had to find some way to live with it and move forward and have a life. And then a remarkable thing happened. I reached out to Parkinson's organizations because there was already a lot of kind of stuff out there. And I wasn't completely satisfied that there was any purely goal-related foundation or organization. I mean, they were really terrific, and they had projects and raised money on a prodigious basis, some of them. But so I thought about it a lot, and I just thought, well, I'm going to leave the show, and I'm going to create this foundation. And that is such a privilege that there's nothing else to do but that.
Michael J. Fox talking about why he decided to go public with this information, to make a movie about it, really. He says, really, there is nothing else to do with it. It's a little bit difficult to understand what he's saying. I think you can pretty much make out what he's talking about. His physical tremors were pretty pronounced. You'll see that when we show some snippets of this interview tomorrow on WGN TV Morning News. So at times, his tremors, I mean, his body is completely shaking. So is his voice, which, you know, I think you can kind of hear through that, though, and hear the essence of what he is saying. One of the most beautiful parts of this interview is when I asked him about memorable moments in his life. What did he cherish the most? Are there certain cherished moments with all of the highs that he's experienced in his life? What was his most cherished moments is very sweet.
When you look back, are there projects, moments that you look back on as, you know, being ones that are most meaningful to you? I don't know anybody that doesn't get a big smile on their face when you start talking about Back to the Future at all.
Well, Back to the Future is a real gift. It was this great experience, and I was so hungry for it. And I was so enjoyed, I was so full of joy with the acting that it just it was a great blessing. So that would be the big thing. And other little moments, we talk about moments. There's a great thing in the film where the editor, Michael Hart, who's amazing, so gifted, and he cut together the scene against it. Now, if people don't know, the movie uses clips from my career to form a narrative of my life. That's really smart the way they do it. And so there's a scene where Tracy's character and I from Bright Lights, Big City are walking through the streets of the village, and it was shot by Gordon Willis. So, you know, it's going to be good. It'll look good. And while we're doing the scene, I realized I'm falling in love with it. Right in that scene, that's on TV. It wasn't in the movie. And I was so blown away by that. That moment, I'm falling in love with my wife. And there it is.
That's one of the sweetest things I think I've ever heard. He said he realized at that moment, I'm talking about Tracy Poland, his now wife of many decades, but at the time she had played his love interest on Family Ties and then starred in this movie Bright Lights, Big City, and they're doing a scene in the village in New York, and he gets the realization, I'm falling in love with this woman. I'm falling in love with who will be my wife. That is just one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard. And we will have much more with Michael J. Fox tomorrow morning on WGN TV Morning News. Let's take a quick break. I want to talk about, don't we think on Mother's Day, when we think about our moms, certain foods that 100% bring back mom memories? Is there a dish that your mom made that 100% brings back those memories? I'll tell you what mine is if you tell me what yours is. Coming up next, hopefully you'll do something nice for your mom. And I don't mean you do something for your mom that she has to clean up later on. I made something on TV the other day that's easy for dads or kids to make. Super easy to make, super easy to clean up for you to clean up, guys. Not for your mom. She gets the full day off today. She just wants to be with, you know, mothers will tell you this. My mom used to say this. I just want to be with the family. That's really all I want. And we would have like a nice, usually we would have like a nice cookout, and all the boys would cook and all the moms, you know, got to relax and just have a nice day. But what I'm looking for are foods that are just quintessentially, you think of your mom, you think of this dish. And I've told this story many times on the air about how my mom, in the last couple of years before she passed, we were talking about foods, and she said to me one time, did you not realize how many things I would cook with just ground beef? Because that's all we could afford. And she would say, do you not know how poor we were growing up? I was the original hamburger helper. She would make hamburger with noodles and hamburger with rice and hamburger with vegetables. And I started thinking about it. It's like, you did make ground beef a lot with all the time. But that's not, I mean, I do think of that when I, if I'll make something like that now,
right,
I'll think of, this is something my mom would have made. But what I think about is the Greek lasagna pastizza.
I love that.
That's a spectacular dish to make, and nobody made it better than her and my grandmother. I have their recipe that I've posted online. If anybody wants to give it a shot, the recipe's out there at WGNTV.com/DeanCooks, because I made it on TV once. There's a video of me making it with my mom once.
Did it take, when you make it by on your own, either in your personal life too, regardless of whether on TV, does it, even though you have a recipe, it probably doesn't taste exactly the same, right?
I think it's pretty close.
Oh, is it close? Because a lot of times, you know, it's like somebody has the recipe, but
it's not quite like
it's mine. Not. Yeah, the way they grab, you know, it's like take a fistful of this.
I'm glad that I made it with her. We have this on video. We put it on TV once, of in my own kitchen. She telling me how to make it and what to do and smacking my hand with a spoon if I wasn't doing it just right. But I'm glad I did it with her.
Yeah.
Because that makes a big difference. And I urge all of you, spend time talking to your moms on camera, on your iPhones, telling stories, sharing recipes. That will mean so much to you someday.
I did an interview with
my
mom.
To have all those things.
Before the cell phone.
Yeah.
I had a camcorder, and I did that with that knowing, not to be morbid, but I was like, you know what? Someday I'm going to want this.
Right.
And it
makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Someday it's going to be, very meaningful. I purposely today, you know, a lot of people have said, are you going to play your mom's recipe for yogurt today? I think it's a little too soon for me personally. I think it's to hear her voice.
Yeah.
I don't. Honestly, I think I would break down a little bit to hear her voice.
It's only been, what, 2 years?
So I'm taking a pass on it this year. We'll give a little rest for a little while. I'm so glad that I have some recordings, and especially that we cooked together and that we made this dish, pastizo, the Greek lasagna, together. What about your mom?
Well, my joke always was, if Swanson didn't make it, we didn't eat it, because my mom was not a cook at all. But I must have to say, and it's a kind of a joke, but she one thing, when I was growing up as a little kid, I loved hamburgers, and she would make me hamburgers in all different shapes. Instead of just round, she's like, you know, this is getting too boring, so she would make me rectangles,
really?
and triangles.
She was teaching you geometry.
Yeah, and I did horrible in geometry.
Yeah,
but so she was like, you know, enough. She goes, isn't this boring to keep eating these round hamburgers? So that's my, if I had to have one memory, is the triangular hamburgers and squares. Yeah. And then, you know, Wendy's makes square hamburgers.
Right, right.
You know?
Right. But, well, and it follows the ground beef theme.
Exactly.
That I was talking about. Here's 847. We had ground beef dishes all the time.
Now, wasn't that expensive or no?
I don't think.
I mean, because isn't beef expensive. Isn't meat expensive or no?
Yeah, but I think you can. You know, she found a way to take a pound of ground
right beef and make it into yeah stretch and the
turn
soup.
It into a giant pot of yeah. something or other.
Yeah.
Here's somebody saying that. Let's see here. Homemade matzo balls.
Oh, nice.
Homemade chicken soup, chicken in the oven, homemade mashed potatoes are the things that remind me of my mom. That'll bring back a thousand memories. Here's a great one. What reminds me of my mom, says the 815 area code, Polish cabbage rolls.
Oh, Gołąbki.
Gołąbki's.
I love Gołąbki. Oh.
I made cabbage rolls for the first time in my life about a month or so ago.
Mm.
They were delicious, but it took all day.
Did it really?
I don't know
why.
My mom worked full time also. I don't know how my mom worked.
It's that hard?
Raised four boys and had time to do all this cooking because the cabbage rolls took forever, at least for me.
Really?
I'm sure, like, you know, for experience.
Yeah, the tomato sauce with it, the rice and the meat.
Tomato sauce and the rice and meat. They were delicious.
They're
but
great. Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I won't be doing this for another 20 years. Here's somebody saying braised oxtails with pineapples.
Ooh, wow.
Wow, that's
exotic.
That sounds really good. I love anything that's got pineapples in it. I'm a big fan. Let's see, tuna noodle casserole. Yeah, that was pretty famous. Here's my mom made tuna noodle casserole with crumbled barbecued potato chips.
Oh, wow.
On top.
Interesting.
Interesting. These are some very interesting recipes from that. From that time.
The casserole. I mean, got everybody made casseroles. Yeah. Well, that was the thing.
You crumble some barbecue potato chips.
And anything.
On anything.
Yeah, right.
You could crumble some into my mouth right now. I'll just eat them by myself. 224 area code. My mom made many great dishes, but some favorites were homemade cheese ravioli.
Oh, yeah.
Roast beef with mashed potatoes. Yeah. We had roast beef like every fancy occasions.
Yeah,
we had like a little rotisserie in the kitchen.
Oh,
and she put that roast beef in there and just let it go, and the house smelled so good. Roast beef with mashed potatoes and gravy and apple slices.
Ooh, apple slices are good.
No matter how hard I try, I cannot make roast beef that is as tender and delicious as hers. Now, my grandmother. I don't want to slight my grandmother.
Her mom.
My mom's mom, she was also a really good cook. My mom really learned to cook
from her.
But my grandmother openly admitted to me at one time that she purposely gave out wrong recipes to people so other people's versions wouldn't be as good as hers.
Well, there's a Raymond episode with that.
Marie Barone.
Yeah, she wants to make the meat. She wants to show. It was the meatballs.
Meatballs.
And she gave her the wrong spice.
Yeah. Well, she put a fake label.
She put a fake label on the thing, so she would put the wrong spice in it, so they wouldn't taste good.
Well, my grandmother did that.
decades
before.
So that's where you get it.
Would purposely
your little edge, that Dean Richards edge. I wondered where you got that from.
You
got
to do what you got to do.
That's your grandmother talking.
815. Don't make me slap you with the back of my hand. 815 area code. My mom made the best goulash and German potato salad ever.
Goulash.
Wow. Does
goulash
that sound
is good. I've had that in Germany. That's good.
847 area code. Every time I make noodle kugel, I think of my mom's. Of course, hers were always better. Of course, mom's was always better. someone here at 630 area code says ground beef back in the day was 3 pounds for a dollar.
Oh, no wonder why you had green ground beef so much then. Wow.
This one says I make cabbage rolls without making rolls. I make the meatballs and cut the cabbage into the sauce. Oh, that's a fantastic idea.
So this way you don't have to worry about.
That was the hardest part for me.
Right, is boiling the is getting the cabbage to
getting
be,
the cabbage and then rolling it like a little cigar.
She takes that out of
or
there.
Or for all of the potheads that we have listening, I know we have quite a few listening to the show, rolling them like what I've heard is a marijuana cigarette that you crazy kids out there call a joint. It's rolling the cabbage. But I like this idea. You make them into the meatballs and cut some cabbage into it.
You have to go through that whole rolling
process. That's what I'm going to do from now on.